This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. Audible.com has over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. To start your trial today, go to audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport.
Welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, with your hosts, Alfred Conaway, Nate Milton, and Marcus Vanderberg. So sit back and relax, because you're now down with the Kings.
And welcome to the Kings of Sport, the podcast that's changing the game one show at a time, a.k.a. the world's most dangerous sports program, a.k.a. Keeping It Real Radio, a.k.a. iTunes' longest-running weekly episodic sports podcast hosted by two or more African-Americans that are not affiliated with a major national network. I am the Godfather, Nate Milton, joined as always by Big Nasty Alfred Cunawa and Marcus Money Vanderberg. What's going on, brothers?
What is going on, Nathan?
What's up, Nate?
Not much. We got lots to talk about this week. We got the MLB. We got NFL. We got Marcus's Hockey Minute. We got a great list coming up on this show, and we have a great chat with the host of Torres vs. Zombies, the one and only Silver Fox, Alfredo Torres. But before we get into that, we got some news and notes to catch up on. Again, I mentioned in the intro, Marcus Vanderberg has a nickname for this week. A couple big events, Marcus. Just seen you on Facebook flashing that cash out there, pimping. What's going on?
Yeah, so at work there is a fantasy baseball league that I took part in. This was a 18 team lead. The buy-in, I believe, was $20 each, and I won the lead. I'm a bit of a fantasy baseball dork. I've been playing fantasy baseball since high school, so I wasn't too concerned going into the lead because I knew out of the people in the league, I'd probably follow baseball the closest. So yeah, that was a nice little.
I was gonna say, are these staffers? Are these columnists? Is Mike Eyes in the league?
No, so this doesn't include like Jeff Pass and Tim Brown. None of those guys. This is just people in the office. So I knew that out of those crew, I probably had the sharpest baseball mind. So I was able to pull that off, and then later on in the week, I was selected to be an APSC fellow. So APSC is basically the Associated Press Sports Editors Group. So it's pretty much all the sports editors across the United States, and they have a fellowship program to for diversity members, so minorities and women, to increase managerial skills. So it's a 9-month fellowship program, which will help me become a better manager, so I can be Mr. Manager instead of Mr. Employee. So
very nice.
So go ahead. That's what separates this show from other shows. We got credentials, at least one of us does.
Award-winning show.
So I'll be spending some time in Indianapolis twice, once in the fall and once in the spring. So if we have any listeners in the Midwest, I've been to Indy once before, so if there's any tips, advice, places to see, stuff to do, so let me know.
Get that hot interview with Andrew Luck.
Yeah, that's about it. That's all around in Indianapolis. It's called Naptown for a reason. It's pretty dull.
Naptown?
I'm saying it's. Let's see. Indianapolis is. I was gonna say, isn't the combine always out there, or will you be around that time?
I'm going back the second time, like the week after combine.
So you could have checked out the combine and seen your boy Jadavian.
Yeah, because that's what I want to do: is stare at men in tights.
Running He'll around. Put on the 40 halfway through that.
why are we? Don't pick on Jadavion.
let's start there. I wanted to start off with some football news and notes, but this situation between the old ball coach Steve Spurrier and Jadavion Clowney, and it's almost like a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation for Clowney, because at the one point, you know, there's something to be said for being true to your team, being true to your school and all that rah-rah college stuff that people still like to hold on to. But by the same token, this guy has got to protect what is in him and his family's best interest, and that's making sure that he's right for the NFL draft.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of scrutiny against Jadeveon Clowney after the media built him up as this great superstar and phenom based on one hit.
He's Heisman a, Trophy favorite.
Heisman Trophy favorite off this Michigan hit from last year from the bowl season. And right after game one this year against North Carolina, where he didn't have 10 sacks, they started turning on Jadeveon. So now they're questioning the fact that he was actually hurt or not. It turns out that he was hurt. And even Steve Spurrier had to backtrack on his statements. He called him out after Saturday's game, and I believe it was yesterday. He had to go back and basically eat crow for what he said because he found out that Jadeveon was actually hurt. He's been hurt. He's been playing hurt. So I'm not sure what more they expect from Clowney. We saw what happened to Marcus Lattimore at South Carolina last year. He blew out his, or 2 years ago maybe, he blew out his knee. It costed him money in the draft. It hurt his draft stock. So, you know, I there was a lot of talk in the offseason about will Jadeveon actually play this season? Will he just sit out or try to challenge the draft rules? But it's just funny that the media has quickly turned on this guy for I don't know. The whole thing is just silly to me.
Alfred, defend your boy Spurrier, because one minute he comes out and he's like, well, Jadeveon can play if he wants to play, but I don't think, you know, they said he was healthy, but if he don't want to play, he don't have to play. Then the next day, like Marcus said, he walks it back, and Jadeveon is one of the greatest players to ever step foot on this campus, and we owe him a lot, and you see the revenue and the wins rack up, and, you know, Jadeveon can come back whenever he wants to. So defend your boy Steve Spurrier.
Well, I'm not going to defend the old ball coach, and obviously it sounds like a work because what Steve Spurrier originally said, he'll play when he wants to play, seems like his real sentiments, and then once the firestorm started, then he backtracked. Look, welcome to mainstream sports. As the great Jay-Z once said, they love you, they hate you, then they love you again. The fact that Jadeveon Clowney was such a Heisman hopeful and the projected number one draft pick should have told us all that this was coming. This has happened to Andrew Luck. This has happened to Matt Barkley. If you look at who wins a Heisman, it's always somebody who comes out of nowhere, who gets hot late, somebody who the media wasn't talking about in September. And everybody loved him, like Marcus said, based on one hit. That's the B-roll you always see when they're talking about Jadeveon Clowney. And now that there's a little bit of a creak in the roof, people are coming down on Jadeveon. But, you know, I have a feeling that if and when he gets drafted, top 10, top 5, maybe number 1 overall, who knows in the NFL, that he's going to make some plays. I think he is built to be an NFL defensive lineman, and they're going to love him again. This is just the cycle that the media goes through. When you get too popular, people come down on you. Once upon a time, Kanye West was a great underdog story because he got in a car crash and he broke his jaw. Now people hate him, but when he makes the next great album, they're going to love him again. It's just what happens.
You know what would have been great, Marcus, if Jadeveon would have been like, you know, I can't go to the NFL because of this rule, so I'm going to go back to school. But you know what? I'm going to go ahead and redshirt.
Yeah. I mean,
to me would have been, you know, because, you know, he would have had the haters, but they hating him anyway. So mm-hmm. I would have been like, hey, I'm redshirting. I'm here with the team. If you need me in an emergency, give me a call. But I'm not risking my future for this team.
Yeah. I mean, that would have brought on more questions. But I think the difference between Matt Barkley and Jadeveon Clowney is they never questioned Barkley's worth at that. You know, they admitted that, you know, Barkley wasn't the best player in football. It wasn't a Heisman Trophy candidate. But I feel like the Clowney criticism is at a different level because now they're questioning the man, you know, his integrity as a player, if he's actually taking plays off. Roto World had a great stat that, you know, Jadeveon Clowney's played in 78% of South Carolina's defensive snaps, the games he's been playing. That's, you know, 78% is a percentage that compares to other 4-3 defensive ends in the NFL. So to say that, you know, this guy is not, you know, not out there all the time or taking plays off is a bit harsh. And I do wonder if there's a deeper reason for why he's getting all this criticism besides, you know, the media trying to tear down the Nets' best thing.
And obviously his production was going to go down because he's not, you know, a running back. He's not a quarterback. He's not somebody that can take the game into his own hands. He's a defensive player, and, you know, you can scheme against Jadeveon Clowney, you know, and you know, double team him, triple team him, cut him. You know, there's a myriad of ways and myriad of reasons why his production has gone down, and it's not all on Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah, and the NFL defensive lineman is not a glory position. It's not a sexy position. It's all about the quarterback. You know, they're always talking about Andrew Luck and the Mark Barkley, like we were saying. And even when they're talking about a highly touted defensive player, it's always like a cornerback or a safety. Now it's like America's learning to evaluate the defensive line position. And even though, like Marcus said, the stats say Jadeveon Clowney is on the field and working hard, but maybe Chris Spielman will see him put his hands on his hips, and then that will get blown out of proportion because he's not a quarterback. He's not on the field for, you know, every other drive. He's on the field playing defense where he's playing a crazy amount of snaps in succession. And of course, yeah, every now and then you're going to get a little tired, but I feel like they're blowing it out of proportion because they don't know how to evaluate such a position at such a high level.
So before we go to the NFL, one last hit on Clowney. I'm going to set the bar at 5 games. Do we see him over 5 games for the rest of the season or under 5 games, Marcus?
Over.
Alfred?
Way over.
You got to remember, South Carolina is a good team, so he's going to want to win and want to play. I just think it's a matter of him getting healthy. So yeah, over.
Yeah, I would say over too. But I mean, that is, of course, if Jadeveon wants to play, he can come out here and play with us. Oh, you got to love Steve Spurrier. But let's switch it over to the NFL for some quick hits. And an interesting week. The Giants are who we thought they were. The Dolphins kind of on a downward slope, and we'll talk about that a little bit later with Alfredo Torres, though his beloved Miami Dolphins. Mike Vick, surprise, spoiler alert, got nicked up again. So Nick Foles will be leading the Eagles against the hapless Bucks. And Josh Freeman is back in the league with the Minnesota Vikings. And he's got brother Christian pondering his future, if you will. So where do you want to go, Marcus? Take one of those topics or go off the board. What was your impression of the big news and notes from the NFL last week?
Well, let's talk Mike Vick. You wanted to defend your boy last week on Twitter, so let's start there.
Absolutely.
Let's start with your boyfriend, Michael Vick. So, yeah, Mike Vick got hurt. That's not a surprise. But then, Nick Foles had a decent second half, and that drummed up the whole, well, is Nick Foles the right guy for the job compared to Michael Vick? And you thought this was just ludicrous that – you know, you should bench Mike Vick, but for this Chip Kelly system, Michael Vick is a pretty inaccurate passer, and the Oregon offense had success because they had quarterbacks that were accurate. Michael Vick this year, 53% passing, that's even low for him. He's not been a 60% completion guy anyways, but 53 is pretty low. He had 2 great games to start off the season, but since then his completion percentage is under 50%. So, no, it wouldn't surprise me if Nick Foles took the job. It sounds like Vick might actually play this week, so it depends if he has the chance to audition and take the job. But, no, it wouldn't surprise me at this point. The Eagles aren't going anywhere, even in that sorry NFC East. So, I'm not really buying the Mike Vick thing. You can defend your boy, though.
Now, my big thing is if Vick is healthy, you know, that's the caveat. If Vick is healthy, I think he gives you a better chance to win than Nick Foles, who the only reason I want to see Nick Foles play this week is because you have a matchup between Foles and Glennon for the Bucks, and that's 2 quarterbacks who both look like Napoleon Dynamite's little brother. So that would be interesting from that standpoint. But in terms of Mike Vick, you're right. You know, he's always been in the high 50s in terms of career completion percentage, but I think – in terms of big play offense, in terms of, you know, running that system, I think Michael Vick gives you a better chance, a better opportunity to win. And you mentioned it when you set it up. Nick Foles had a decent second half. And the media on Fox, on Twitter, all everywhere, they went crazy. They're like, Nick Foles dramatically brought this team back from the brink of defeat. When Michael Vick went out of the game, the Philadelphia Eagles were up and they were challenging to extend that lead. So it's not like Vick was, you know, crapping the bed before he got hurt. You know, Vick had he started off slow, but then he had, you know, a couple good drives in a row. And then Nick Foles comes in, goes for two field goal drives, finally gets a touchdown in the fourth quarter, and then they get kind of a gift touchdown off of Eli Sad Face Manning throwing another pick late in the game. And that's another topic for later on, Eli. Whew. But, I'm not discounting Nick Foles' skills. I think he's a good player. He's a good backup. But that's all he is, in my opinion. I think Philly, for even though you said they don't have a shot at the playoffs, this league is the division is atrocious. I don't see the Giants getting any better. The Redskins will get marginally better when RG3 is healthy, but they're pretty much done. The Cowboys, you're gonna put your faith in Tony Romo? I don't put my faith in Tony Romo. I believe in Harvey Dent more than I believe in Tony Romo. And so, you know, in that division, I think if healthy, and that's the key, Michael Vick still gives you the best opportunity to win. So, you know, that's all I'm saying about the situation. You know, I think, like I said, you know, Nick Foles is a quality backup. I got nothing against the guy. But if Chip Kelly and that Eagles team wants to win, they need that big play explosiveness in that offense, and Michael Vick gives you that best opportunity.
I would say Foles had more than a good second. I mean, he had 200 yards and 2 touchdowns in the second half. So, Vick hasn't, you know, Vick had two games with 2 touchdowns this season. So I'm just not really buying the Mike Vick thing. Nick Foles ran a spread offense at Arizona. He was an accurate quarterback at Arizona. So I feel like he can run that system better than Michael Vick. Michael Vick turned to his legs in the Giants game because he couldn't complete a pass. So I don't know. I've never been a Mike Vick fan. I've never really understood the hype. I know he's an exciting player and all, but just looking at the numbers, he's just never been accurate. He's always been injury prone. He had a stretch where he was turnover prone. He sort of got that under control now, but, you know, we'll see what happens.
If you're Chip Kelly, you're in kind of a funny situation to where you got to be careful, because Michael Vick may give you the best chance to win this year, but if you're going to hitch your wagon to a guy who's so injury prone, who's not going to play 16 games, who's so unstable when it comes to quarterback play, then that could be your job, and it could be your job now. You see how terribly the Eagles' defense has been. That's enough in and of itself. If that leads to the Eagles losing 10, 11, 12 games, that could get Chip Kelly fired. If you are to put in a quarterback like a Nick Foles, who maybe is a little less injury-prone and who can show some progression over the course of a season, Chip Kelly may buy himself some time long-term in Philadelphia. It's the same situation that Rex Ryan has found himself in New York, and even though he didn't want Geno Smith in there as a starting quarterback, the fact that Geno Smith has improved every single week may save Rex Ryan's job as the Jets are 3-2.
Well, I hear what you're saying, but I think Chip Kelly, first of all, needs to worry about this year. Second of all, his quarterback of the future is not even on his roster. You know, sorry, Matt Barkley fans, but, you know, it's not going to be Vic Foles or Barkley, you know, going ahead for the Philadelphia Eagles. Chip Kelly is probably going to want to bring in his guy for next year, you know, that coming out of the draft, whether that be, you know, I don't know how bad the Eagles will be. I personally think they have a shot, like I said, to challenge in that NFC, in that weak NFC East. So I don't know if they're in a position to go after a Taj Boyd or a Bridgewater, somebody of that nature. But if your objective is to get through this year and, you know, have a bridge quarterback for next year while you get that young guy ready, I think, you know, like I said, Michael Vick gives you the best opportunity to win. And in terms of what Marcus was saying about, you know, the hype surrounding Vick, I would say that a lot of it is deserved because we hadn't seen a guy like this. We've seen guys with pieces of that puzzle in terms of a Steve Young or Randall Cunningham or Fran Tarkenton, but we hadn't seen it, you know, with the turbo button pushed down, to use a Madden phrase. And, you know, he came along at the right time. He was kind of ahead of his time because, you know, without Mike Vick, you know, we might not have seen more of an acceptance for these guys like RG3, like Cam Newton, like Russell Wilson. They're all more accurate than Vick. They're better passers. But, you know, somebody had to kind of break that. I don't know if it was a glass ceiling at the time because there had been African-American quarterbacks in the league, but it was kind of frosty. So whatever, you know, the ice ceiling that Michael Vick had to break through to give coaches that pause to say, hey, you know, maybe we can win with a scrambling quarterback, with a black quarterback that can run, you know, in an up-tempo offense. So I do think that maybe some of the hype was unwarranted, but I also would say that, you know, I'm not going to say he's overrated because, you know, when it's all said and done, he's going to be one of the most exciting players that the NFL has ever seen.
Yeah, when it's all said and done, and I can agree with that. I know Marcus isn't the biggest Michael Vick fan, but when he's right, he is one of the most exciting players that the NFL has ever produced. And it's fun to see him run around there and create plays like a Johnny Manziel. But the knock on Michael Vick is always going to be his injury-prone career, along with a lot of other knocks. And he's just had an up-and-down career, and he's just not somebody who I see. Obviously, he's not a franchise quarterback. And your argument is that this year they need to win now. I'm not even sure if he does give him the best chance to win now. But, yes, I agree. Long-term, Michael Vick was revolutionary in the NFL.
Chip Kelly might not see next year. That's the problem. So he's got to worry about this year because
You think they would fire him after one season, or do you see him going back to college?
Well, teams have to show cause for him to come back to college. So he'd have to get fired for him to go back to college. But, you know, if the Eagles go, you know, 4-12 or 5-11, I'm not sure how long the Chip Kelly honeymoon will last in Philadelphia. Yeah,
they play the Giants at least one more time. They play the Redskins. There's some easy pickings in that division.
Nothing's easy when you're a defense that poor. yeah, the schedule's not too tough. They do at Green Bay, Chicago at home, Detroit at home, at Arizona at home. So yeah, it's not too tough, but they need to start winning and soon.
And all I'm saying is a healthy Mike Vick gives him a better shot. Like I said, I'm not discounting.
And I still disagree. I think Foles can run that offense better. Foles ran a similar offense at Arizona. I think he can do the same at Philadelphia, and he's a bigger, much bigger quarterback.
He can run it more accurately than Vick. But in terms of those big-time scoring plays, I think Vic gives you that better chance in terms of a high-powered offense. In terms of plays going for 20 yards or more.
I mean, are you talking about just his hit based on the running factor? Because I don't think...
I'm talking about with his feet or with his arms. Because, you know, well, you can say whatever you want to say in terms of Vic's accuracy, and I'll go along with it. But in terms of arm strength, Vic still has a pretty strong arm.
Yeah, but the problem is he's inaccurate. He's got to be in the bottom five this year in percentage for completions. I mean, what good?
I don't know about this year. Look, this year is a bad year for quarterbacks. Shout out to Eli once again.
What good does? well, let's check.
Yeah, I would say
he's the mold of a Chip Kelly quarterback.
He's in the bottom four. Josh Freeman 45.7%. Blaine Gabbert 48.8%. Eli Manning 53.7%. Michael Vitt 53.8%. So. There you go. He's one percentage point better than Eli Manning.
He's better than a two-time winning Super Bowl quarterback. I rest my case.
Yeah, he's not even better than Brandon Whedon. So what does that tell you?
We've got to have an asterisk next to it that we are 1 month into the season. Yes, Michael Vick historically hasn't been the most accurate quarterback, but there's no way you can convince me that Brandon Whedon is a better quarterback than Michael Vick through this small sample size.
No, I'm not saying he is. I'm just saying in terms of being accurate, the system that Chip Kelly runs, you need to have an accurate quarterback. He's not accurate. He's never been accurate. So the fact that Michael Vick was supposed to run this offense, I just never understood it because it goes against Chip Kelly's philosophy. That's all I'm saying.
Alex Smith
would be perfect in this offense.
Yeah, I will go with that as well. We've seen how well Alex is doing in Kansas City. In terms of the accuracy, I'll give you that all day long with Mike Vick. But, I think with the deficiencies of the defense that we mentioned earlier, and as well as we could talk about the explosiveness of Philly's offense, but they're still missing some weapons, and I don't have faith in that line. So I think all things considered, Foles is definitely more accurate, but Vic, in my opinion, will still give you a better chance to put points on the board.
And is that offense really that explosive? Hasn't that expired? Because the two times we saw Philadelphia look really game-breaking and, as the media called it, revolutionary, it was against historically bad Redskins defense and historically bad Giants defense. Against everybody else, they've looked mediocre.
Offense, what? Yeah. Well, the Chargers. No, they looked great in San Diego. They just couldn't.
Yeah.
Couldn't stop.
And that was another bad defense. Another
they couldn't
horrible
stop Philip Rivers. Right. But Kansas City found a way to slow him down. Denver shut him down.
Against Denver, Denver's offense is their defense. If Peyton's putting up 50 points, I don't care if you're Mike Vick, Tom Brady, Blaine Gabbert. I don't care who you are. You're not going toe to toe with Peyton Manning. And even if you do, as we saw this past week with Tony Romo, you have to play a perfect game in order to overcome, that Denver attack.
Or you have to be in the playoffs. Just wait.
Oh, man. So that's our NFL discussion. Did want to hit on some baseball and Marcus's hockey minute. But before we did that, though, Alfred, I didn't want to forget this. Football is a very important college professional. And, of course, fantasy football. And we got a message from one of our great listeners, Paul Vosh, and he sent you some nice words, brother Nasty.
Is that right? Why don't we favor this? I have not heard this, but I would go on. Tell the story.
All right. Paul wrote us a email on you can email us at kingsofsport@gmail.com. And he says, "Dear Kings of Sport, when I joined the league, one of my stated goals was to beat Big Nasty. After a sounding defeat in week one, I rebounded and finally fulfilled my promise this week. In convincing fashion, I might add. Not only that, I also managed to end his undefeated run, thus stopping his ego from reaching critical mass. And now I hope you can find it in you to add the beginning of the following video." We're going to play it right now. Whoever's in the production truck. Ricky, play that music. Ricky's on staff now. After 31 shows, we can afford a staff. I hope you can find it in you to add the beginning of the following video as a sound clip to adequately sum up Big Nasty's fantasy week. It's from a cartoon I used to watch as a kid that follows the adventures of a duck named Alfred as he fights against dictators, racism, and helps the country transition from a monarchy to a democracy. It's a European show, and he also has a girlfriend who is a brown duck from the show's version of Africa, and her father's name.
So wait, that's how you. It's not accurate then, because he doesn't date anything brown. So this is an Alfred then.
Yeah, that's where it veers off of reality. But her father's name is Kwawana, and he fights against apartheid. You can add this up to Alfred Kwawana, which is suspiciously close to Alfred Kunawa. Is this an overly elaborate excuse to request the use of a silly soundbite? Yes, it is, and I would also like to request that Alfred changes his nickname to Big Ducky. Anyways, after achieving my first goal, I can now carry on with my real goal. That is to crush you all with my carefully engineered game plans, because that is what we Germans do. Also, we drink lots and lots of beer. Have fun in the race for second place. Hashtag shots fired from Paul.
Now, I would like to begin by saying I will not address this quote directly. I would like to say that I legitimately appreciate our listeners from all around the world, and I would like to thank them for, like I have innovated the phrase, playing for a position in second place in our league. Now, my offices and my publicist has gotten wind of these comments, and she has forwarded the following quote that I sent to you guys in our Facebook group that I would like to share with my beloved listeners. "The offices of Alfred Kunawa do not trifle with regular season banter. However, we are happy that Mr. Kunawa remains such a point of emphasis in a league he clearly owns." Now, do you know why I own this league, gentlemen? It's because I build my teams.
That reparations?
Yes, of course. That goes without saying. But I build my teams for the playoffs. I'm supposed to be 1-4 right now, but I'm 4-1 with two running backs who are sharing time. Come November, Giovanni Bernard and Lamar Miller will be featured backs. What are you all going to do in November when I'm lighting the world on fire? I'm 4-1 right now when I'm still developing the team. Come November, what are you guys all going to do? You better be shaking in your boots. And I invite everybody, all of our listeners, to get your trash talk out of your system while you still can beat me. Because come 1 month from now, I'm not going to be beatable. Mark my words, Big Nasty is the best in the world.
You done, Bit Ducky?
Quack, quack.
You guys are on quack if you think I'm losing this league.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Wow. Yes.
And wow. For the record, Nate lost this week. Alfred lost this week. I won this week. Moving on up. Mm. Like I said, I would. So we'll see you in the playoffs, Alfred. Nate, I'm not sure about you.
Hey, you never know. Like our division is like the NFC East. It's gonna be the last man standing.
How did I end up in the division with 4-5-1 teams? I mean,
How good you are. You should take down any division.
I might call shenanigans on this one.
I mean, you are the 5-time fantasy champion guru. So I mean you should be a fighting champion.
I will. I'll be back. Don't you fellas worry.
Why are you trying to come down and fight the Intercontinental Champions when you should be up there challenging for the WWE title, man?
I'm going to win that WWE Championship.
Me and Marcus are in a league with Curtis Axels and Damian Sandows and Rybacks.
If you think this is going to soften the blow, that your self-deprecation is going to soften the blow when I do win, it's not true. You guys are going to be my first targets.
Mm. All right.
All right. Yeah, we'll see. So moving on to baseball, continuing Marcus's, the best week of Marcus Vandenberg's life. Not only did he win a fantasy baseball league with lots and lots of money. Not only was he named a fellow, not only did he win in fantasy football, but his Dodgers defeated one of the greatest franchises in the history of the National League.
In the regular
Atlanta
season.
Braves.
Yeah, in the regular season.
Yeah.
Hey, we are a class organization.
Nothing classy about the Braves. Shut up.
Hey, you disrespecting Hank Aaron, brother.
Milwaukee. Milwaukee. the lovely city of Milwaukee, right, Alfred?
Yeah, speaking of great franchises, don't get me started on Milwaukee.
See.
And we'll just leave it there. The Dodgers defeated the Braves, and I had a feeling, you know, the LA would win, but I was holding out hope as a Braves fan. But either way, I knew the next round, even if we won, was going to be tough because St. Louis looked like a beast, Marcus. I don't know how your boys are going to do in this next round.
So much of a beast that it took 5 games to beat the Pirates. Come on.
Hey, that's a scrappy
Pittsburgh
Pirates organization.
And speaking about your classy Braves, this whole Chipper Jones story, did you hear about that?
He is a former Brave.
Chipper Jones pitched correctly the Dodgers to win the series. So when game one came around, when he threw out the first pitch, they iced him out. No one wanted to catch the pitch. The mascot had to catch the first pitch because they were all upset because he turned his back on his boys. Come on.
He's not part of the tribe anymore. He's part of the media. Plus, he used the N-word, so.
You guys should be applauding that, then. It seems like the type of team that really, you know, embrace the hate.
You talking about we got a Latino manager, we are in the Soul Patrol outfield, we are multicultural.
Yeah, Brian McCann.
Chris Johnson. Yeah, ask Terry Pendleton what he feels about that team. He almost choked Chris Johnson out in that dugout.
That was great, though. I know, like, some Braves fans hated that, but that was great. I love Terry Pendleton.
Yeah, but the Dodgers won. It was fitting that Uribe had that swag on that home run, and Braves should do nothing about it except eat it. So now setting up the whole Cardinals-Dodgers, you know, money versus smart baseball management series. So I'm going to say this is a tough one because I really didn't want to see the Cardinals in the playoffs for this very reason. But I'm going to say Dodgers in six.
Wow, I'm going to say Cardinals in six. And only because when I look at paper tells me the Dodgers should win the series, especially because the playoffs are about pitching and the Dodgers are going in there with Greinke and Kershaw. But when I look at the Cardinals' top players, you got Wainwright, you got Beltran, you got Yadier Molina, and not only are they good, consistent players, they're good, consistent players who know how to win on the championship level. And it just seems like the Cardinals are always in contention. And yes, they went 5 games with the Pirates, but they won that series. And they're always going to do what it takes to win, whether it's winning ugly, whether it's dominating. And I can't see the Cardinals losing in this clutch situation.
Yeah, I'd like for the Dodgers to win, but the Cardinals... I have hated the Cardinals for years for multiple reasons, you know. And like Marcus said when he set it up, the narrative is money versus smart baseball. People act like the Cardinals are some poor team with no salary. And, you know, these dudes spend money. They just spend money wisely. You know, they're not paying, you know, contracts for past their prime players. And you know, everybody thought that they would be on a downward slope with the, you know, when they got rid of Pujols a couple years ago. But to me... You know, they're a big market team in a small market, and I've seen this story before, you know, where a team has the pitching, they have the offense, but the Cardinals find a way to win. So I hate to do it, but I'm gonna agree with Big Ducky and say St. Louis is six.
The only reason why I lean for the Dodgers besides being a homer is that something about having such young pitchers and Michael Walker and Shelby Miller and Joe Kelly – who don't have really the experience that the rest of the Cardinals roster has, scares me a bit for them in terms of how they're going to handle the pressure. We saw today in Game 5 with the A's and Tigers, Sonny Gray, who had a great start in Game 2, rookie pitcher, went out in Game 5, struggled some, and Verlander, the gritty veteran, came in and threw a two-hitter. So I just feel like eventually the bright lights and the pressure might catch up to these young pitchers, and that might be the difference in the series.
By the way, the St. Louis Cardinals in 2013, just outside the top 10 in payroll, number 11, with $116 million in payroll.
Yeah, so let's stop this. They're a scrappy team in a small market, and they're doing the best they can with homegrown talent. They pay money.
They are smart baseball managers. It is smart baseball management. It may be with a lot of money.
But yeah, it's a smart organization, but you know, these are the guys that are doing it the right way, and they don't spend all this money. Hey, you have to spend money to win. You know, it's a fact, and you know, so you know, I think the Cardinals are a great organization, but I hate them, and unfortunately, I see them making another trip to the World Series. The question is, Marcus, who will they be facing if they get there?
I think the Red Sox.
Ugh.
Oh,
I know.
Don't say that.
They're clicking well. I think Boston. I would mind seeing Boston LA. I think that would be fun.
That would be a fun World Series.
And I think baseball really needs fun this year, because I think that most fans have checked out the last few years of the World Series, because it's been, you know, Texas and St. Louis and Detroit and the Giants. I think they really need to have two markets. Even if it was St. Louis, Boston, I think that would be interesting. Basically, anyone in Boston at this point, I think we'd be best for the lead.
You best for business. Throwing a lot of shade on Detroit.
Yeah, well, you know, they've been there recently. I don't think people want to see the Tigers again. So,
I mean, Personally, I want to see the Tigers just because I think it's a better story. I've always been a fan of Leland. I love Fielder. I love Miggy. Verlander is a hometown boy from VA, so you know I always root for him. And was his little brother? Did his little brother make the playoff roster?
Who?
Was it Eric Verlander?
Oh, I don't believe he did.
Okay, because I know he got a late season call up, but you know, again, I'm a fan of that organization, and you know, I think the people of Detroit. Granted, you know, we always kind of talk about how sports uplifts the city, and I don't know to what degree it does, but a championship would be nice for a city that filed for bankruptcy early on in the year. But I do see Boston winning. I'm going to say in six as well. So we get 2 6-game series, and it ends up being the Red Sox and St. Louis in the World Series. And I probably won't watch because I hate both of them.
I think and hope that the Tigers are going to win that series in seven. Because I know Justin Verlander hasn't been what he's been in the regular season, but in the playoffs, you're going in there with Scherzer and Verlander, which is a great 1-2 punch in the AL, much like the LA Dodgers and their two pitchers. And I really do think that Detroit can outlast Boston. And you look at baseball, whenever they're set up to have a big-time collision in the World Series, it never really works out that way. Like the Tampa Bay Rays will get in, or the Colorado Rockies will get in. And, you know, we're talking about how much fun LA and Boston would be. I think we're going to get St. Louis in Detroit.
Hmm. All right, we'll see. We'll see. In World Series starts in 2 weeks, I believe. So,
yeah. So it should be interesting. But speaking of Detroit, the Motor City, Detroit Rock City, some would call it Hockey Town. You see what I did there? That's what they call a segue, gentlemen.
I see.
Take notes, Big Ducky.
My feathers are prohibiting me from writing.
It is time once again, the way I guess this is going to be our tradition now to end off the A block, to end off segment one. Time for Marcus Vandenberg's Hockey Minute, a.k.a. Ask a Hockey Negro.
Yes. So this week's story, you might have seen this story. San Jose Sharks rookie Thomas Hurdle had quite the week. He scored 4 goals against the New York Rangers on, I believe it was Tuesday night. And the last goal that he scored was probably going to be the goal of the year. You should probably look this up if you haven't seen this yet. But Hurdle went between his legs and flicked the puck past Marty Baron in the net. This guy is 19 years old. He's already got 6 goals in maybe 3 or 4 games as a rookie. I'm not a big Sharks fan, being a Kings fan, but this was an amazing goal and just an amazing moment after the game. They interviewed him, and you can tell this kid is clearly 19 and just, you know, overcome with emotion and just sort of, like, taking it all in. The follow-up to the story, though, so Joe Thornton, a member of the Sharks, was asked what he would do if he scored 4 goals in a game, and somehow this made it into the Canadian press. His quote: I'd have my cock out if I scored 4 goals. I'd have my cock out stroking it. End of quote.
And that's why hockey only gets a minute on this show.
Next week, we might have to cut back in 30 seconds.
So that's the hockey minute. Thomas Hertl, Joe Thornton's cock.
That is the worst thing I've heard since – you remember for years Dennis Rodman said if he got a rebound in his final game, he was going to strip buck naked and run off the court?
I somehow missed that story.
I think I remember that.
Yeah, that was the worst potential sports visual. But, yeah, Joe Thornton is – I would say topped it, but I don't want to go there. Anything else, Big Nasty?
No, I will just say real quickly, not to extend this hockey minute, but I think people say hockey is tough on TV and it's a tough TV product to digest. But if you had more Showtime players, hockey would be more fun to watch and more easily to digest for the American public.
Yeah, Joe Thornton sound like a Cinemax player. And on that note, we're going to close out segment one. That's it for the A block. But coming up next, we have a great interview with the one and only Alfredo Torres, host of Torres vs. Zombies. We're going to talk about his beloved Miami Dolphins, his love for the American dream, Dustin Rhodes, if you will. And, of course, with the season premiere of The Walking Dead coming up next week, he's going to talk some Walking Dead. So, Marcus, I know that's not your bag, but you're going to be here for the interview, right?
Hell no.
See this? Brothers get a little bit of money, get a title, and they go all Hollywood on you.
I didn't even tell you about the new car that's coming. We'll save that for next week. That's a tease, people. That's a tease.
All right. Well, Alfred and I will be back with the one and only Silver Fox, Alfredo Torres. Stick and stay. More Kings of Sports right after the break. And welcome back to the Kings of Sports, the world's most dangerous sports program, powered by Place to Be Nation. Go to placetobenation.com. They are your one-stop spot for all the latest news and information in sports, music, gaming, movies, television, and anything else in the world of pop culture. Placetobenation.com. And we are back for another great interview. I'm not even going to say interview, Alfred. I'm going to say conversation. Okay. With our guest today. Unfortunately, Marcus disappeared between the first segment and now, so I guess he might be either he's outspending his money that he won on his fantasy baseball, or he just doesn't want to talk about zombies today. You never can tell with Marcus, but Alfred and I are here, and we are joined at this time by a very special guest. If you've been in the Hampton Roads area for any length of time over the past 10 years, you've definitely heard this man on the radio, on a variety of platforms and programs, most notably the Mike and Bob Show with our good buddy Bobby Fresh. He also was on the Bob's Boneyard podcast and currently is the host of Torres versus Zombies with John McTell. And it's great to have him here, not only to talk some sports, not only to talk maybe some wrestling, but the Walking Dead season premiere is coming up on Sunday, so we definitely wanted to get him in here and get his thoughts on the issue. Ladies and gentlemen, he is a legend in the broadcast industry, a renaissance man, if you will, the Silver Fox, Alfredo Torres. What's good, brother Torres?
Was that a zombie attack?
No, that wasn't a zombie attack. That was the fact, and that was just... You called me a legend, and yet you got the one thing that I've never gotten, a sponsor. I mean, who's the legend here, brother? How are you gentlemen doing today?
Oh, we doing awesome. Good, man.
Okay, so what do you want to talk about first?
Well, let's start off. I know Halloween is kind of your time and your season.
Yes.
But before we get to that, I want to talk about something that may be equally scary to you, and that is your beloved Miami Dolphins that started off.
Oh my God! Let me tell you about the Dolphins. I I feel like I'm in an abused relationship. And I'll tell you why. Because you know what? They come out 3-0. And for years, I've been saying that the Dolphins should have been playing hockey because they don't know anything about a fourth quarter. And then all of a sudden, you get these first three games. They come out, bam, fourth quarter team all of a sudden. It's like they learned. I'm like, oh, God, the Dolphins. Then they get their butt spanked by the Saints. It's at home. It's a Monday night game. All right, I'll give them that one. And then last week, oof.
And the funny thing to me with the AFC East is you kind of got this weird thing where, you know, you got the Patriots with Brady, and I think Brady's probably got 3 or 4 good years left in him before he retires and heads off to France with his supermodel wife and wears Uggs all the time. But you got the Bills with E.J. Manuel who's shown some flashes. You got the Jets with Geno Smith who, you know, turnovers aside, he looks like he might be a player. And then you got your Dolphins with Tannehill. I think the AFC East, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years down the road, it's wide open.
I think it's wide open next year. I think Brady, 3 or 4, you know, 3 or 4 good years, when you talk about Brady, is what he's going to have is not three or four good Brady years. You know what I'm saying? He's not going to be anything like what he was. And at that point, you've taken the fear of Brady out of everybody. You know, and he's getting there now. People are not scared of Brady anymore. You know, they're not. They're not scared of the Patriots anymore. If the Dolphins can get their act together, I think they could be the next AFC East team, you know, because Geno Smith, well, first of all, it's his first year. And we can say it's his first year because Sanchez ain't coming back. So Geno Smith's going to take this year to develop. Okay, the Bills are the Bills, and they always look. You know what? You lose 4 Super Bowls in a row, and it takes you decades to recover. You know, I mean, look at the Vikings; they lost 4 in the 70s, and they still haven't shook that. So I don't see the Bills doing anything. You know, they're the Cleveland Browns or the Detroit Lions of the AFC East. They never will get that respect that they had, at least not while I'm alive, and I don't plan on dying soon. So
I was going to say, how long you got, man?
Oh, no, I got plenty of time, baby. I got plenty of time.
Well, let's talk about now. You said you think the AFC East is a year away from being wide open. I think it's wide open right now until the Bills, who you compare to the Browns, lost E.J. Manuel. They look like a legitimate team. So let's look at a head-to-head matchup with the Dolphins and the Patriots. What do you think the season series would be? 2-0 Dolphins, 2-0 Patriots, 1-1. What do you think is going to happen?
If the Patriots are going to make it because they'll win. And it pains me to say that. It pains me like a hemorrhoid to say that. Because they're going to win because of the fact that they are a veteran team. And the Dolphins can't seem to pull it together, and they need to. That line, if that line does not shape up, it's gonna be a long season for Tannehill, or it might be a short season, depending on how hard he gets hit and by who, you know. So in the head-to-head matchup, I'm gonna go with the Patriots, but it'll be a close game, assuming that front line holds on. And I think that's going to be the point. I don't think the Dolphins need to win against the Patriots. Because, again, forget about this year. I don't think the Dolphins need to win against the Patriots. I just think they need to play in tough. If they take it into the fourth quarter, tie score, down a touchdown, down a field goal, and that's what the Patriots end up winning by, you know what? That's all they need. Because they know they can beat them at that point. And then you go through offseason, you shore up whatever holes you have, which hopefully won't be many, and next year they're coming back.
Now, speaking of coming back, we're going to talk zombies in a minute, but I know you're a big wrestling fan, especially...
Dude, oh my God, first of all, before you can go with the wrestling, can I tell you, I popped like a 10-year-old boy when the Big Show laid out Triple H this past Sunday. For weeks I've been yelling at my team. They got me again with
they,
this.
They sucked you back in.
Oh, dude, and you know what? It's you know, wrestling goes in cycles. And with me, you know, I've been watching wrestling since 70. I was 3 years old. You know, I get in and I get out. And they caught me, but I'm always checking on it. And they caught me with this, what's good for business. You know, and Triple H has been, you know, the way he disrespected Dusty and Goldust and the whole thing with the Rhodes family and the way he's been 40. And to see the Big Show agonizing over, you know, and to put out his dirty laundry. And then for Stephanie McMahon to say, you're fired. I would have slapped that bitch with my big hand. Where I could hold a, you could fit a wine bottle in it and it'll look like a shot glass. I would have slapped her fucking head off like a grizzly slapping a fucking horse. I'm sorry for cursing. I'm sorry, but I would have slapped the shit out of that bitch. But the Big Show being a gentleman leaves. And what happens? He comes back at the end, dismisses the Shield like they're not even there. And when he looked at Triple H, you know what? I'll say it. At Hard On. I'll say it. And when he punched him, all in my pants. I popped. I was like, oh my God. My roommate comes out, he thinks I'm having a heart attack. And then, yeah, oh my God.
You're just coming.
Yeah, that was awesome. I know something, you mentioned Dusty Rhodes. I know you popped for the American Dream, if you will. I know you've been a big fan of him for years and more years.
For years, you understand that the American Dream has given me hope. You understand, seeing how he came up from the son of a plumber. Out in Texas way, he comes up and he makes himself world champion, you understand.
Yeah, absolutely. It's you know, like you said, it's one of the best dramas on TV. I still enjoy the WWE. I ain't even going to front. But let's talk about a drama that's making a comeback on Sunday, Brother Torres.
Oh, yes, sir, Brother Nate. Now we're getting into my house.
We in your wheelhouse, if you will.
If you will, you understand. We're not about talking about The Walking Dead.
Now, this is a show that I didn't start watching until last year, and honestly, the only reason I watched was because my ex was a big fan, and she kind of got me into the show. So, you know, as somebody that's kind of maybe a casual fan, has only seen commercials about the show, tell me why I should be interested in tuning in on Sunday to see season 4.
The reason you should be watching The Walking Dead is not about the zombies. The reason you should be watching it is what makes all great zombie artifacts, and by artifacts I'm using an academic term, meaning anything that deals with zombies, books, movies, TV shows, they do it right. And that is the conflict between humans. Because you see, when it comes to zombie stuff, it's not the zombies that you have to worry about. It's the humans. The zombies you only need to worry about during the initial outbreak. After that, it's human versus human, and that's the conflict. And The Walking Dead does that conflict incredibly.
And is that why you think the zombie genre per se has become so mainstream? Because it's always had its audience and following. It's always been considered kind of niche. But now Brad Pitt is in zombie movies. Now we have The Walking Dead, which is highly rated. What do you think it is that now America has a zombie fetish?
Zombies are metaphoric. See, after 9/11, you had America trying to come to grips with pandemics, with terrorists, with all these kind of things, and horror movies in general are a good escape for people. Okay, so you see the zombies start to make a resurgence because zombies are metaphoric. So you go into watch a zombie movie and you can let yourself get terrified, because that's why people go to horror movies, is to allow themselves that ability to scream and to feel fear, to feel horror, knowing that in 2 hours it's all resolved and you can go home to deal with stuff that isn't resolved. Terrorists, war, you know, the anthrax, all the stuff that was going on in the early 2000s. So zombies become metaphoric, and that's why zombies are such a great monster, because you can put zombies in to represent any problem, anything that we fear, anything that we're concerned with. Mm. Because that becomes the issue, is the thing we're concerned with. And then the problem is always there. Okay, the zombies are always there. But what are we going to do? What are we going to do when Hurricane Katrina happened? You know? Take away Hurricane Katrina and add zombies. Okay, so you have the initial hurricane that comes in. You have the initial wave of zombies, and it causes all kinds of havoc, right, for the first week. And then what happens? The hurricane isn't the problem anymore, though there's still residual effects from the hurricane. What becomes the problem? Human on human. People killing each other, people trying to grab each other's women and each other's water and each other's ammo, people shooting people down the street to get what they got. Meanwhile, there's still the effects of the hurricane all over the place. Same thing with zombies. Now, put the zombies in there. Put zombies down in there. You get the initial wave, right? And people looking out for each other. And then what happens? After the zombies, that initial wave, the zombies aren't the issue. The zombies are still around. But then what becomes the issue? People killing each other for a can of beans, for a bottle of water, you know, thinking that they could, you know, these guys go around and see women and decide they're going to take them. That becomes the issue, and that's the issue with, and that's what makes The Walking Dead great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll go ahead and say a spoiler alert to anybody that hadn't caught up until last season. I don't want to spoil anything. Like, I don't know if you heard last week's show, but I kind of spoiled something for Marcus on Breaking Bad.
Uh-huh.
So I don't want to spoil anything. So if you haven't seen up to season 3, stop this right now and then come back and listen to it later. Because I do want to talk about some of the characters that I saw last year. And like I said, last year was the first season I kind of got into it. And just there was the governor. Like, to me, I think he is I know Rick is the centerpiece of the show, but to me the governor was the person that kind of drove the action.
Yeah, well, it drove me action because Rick was still trying to be a nice guy, and the governor obviously wasn't, and the fact that Rick let himself get manipulated because he had this fantasy of a wonderful place where he could take his family to, and his little group. Yeah, of course the governor drew it. Plus, the governor was a psycho. You know? I mean, who else would keep a bunch of fish tanks filled with zombie heads?
Yeah, and the crazy thing to me was after, I guess he's still on the run as of season 4.
Right.
With the black dude and the Mexican dude.
Right.
And so I wonder if, because the way it looked to me is that the governor's going to kind of be on the down low for a little while and then pop up in the middle of the season rather than being a villain from the start. Is that how you see things?
The way I see things, now the way seasons are, we don't have a traditional season anymore. We have too many seasons. So I don't know what they're going to do with them. In this kind of a world, the governor could go away and never be seen again. And it's not unusual. We could just assume that he was, you know, eaten by zombies. Or, you know, he went someplace and was killed. But in this kind of a world, we could literally go through 3 or 4 years before he comes back. So I don't know. I think it'd be interesting. I got to see what happens. They're not following the comic book, you know, and that's what makes the show fun. Is that if you read the comic book, they're following the comic book enough for you to have an idea of what might be going down, but you don't really know for sure because they've changed it enough. So who knows? You know, in the book, in the comic book, the governor's dead. So you know.
That's very interesting. I thought he was the character. I think between the governor and Michonne, those were the two characters that really drew me to the show. But I do want to get your thoughts on crazy ass Carl, man. this little psycho.
Crazy ass. Let me tell you about crazy ass Carl. Crazy ass Carl went from worst to first. He went from everybody wanted him dead, literally. everybody wanted him. I on Facebook, I do a Walking Dead thread. We call it the Walking Thread. And you know, we get a few people on, and we're talking about the show as it's going on. And we had people literally, when's he going to die? When's he going to, why is he still alive? Feed him to a zombie. Shoot him in the head. This is what people were saying. We come back after that season, from season two to season three, and all of a sudden, goddamn Carl grew cold. There is no, look in his eyes, there is no soul in there anymore, man. When he shot that boy at the end of last season,
that was
cold. There's no other way to say it. That shit was cold-blooded. You know, we were just like the internet went silent. People yelling and screaming on the internet. All of a sudden that happened and just stop.
Yeah, and I think earlier in the same episode, he shut his dad down on some real cold-blooded stuff.
He pretty much called his dad a bitch. You know, he's like, yo, hey, Pops, your son, you're a bitch. You're a straight bitch. Give me a gun. I'm surprised he didn't take the gun from him and pistol whip his dad. That was the only thing missing.
So how many seasons do you guys think Walking Dead has left in it? Because it sounds like it might be approaching the shark. It sounds like some intense stuff that's been going on.
No, it's not even close to Joe. Walking Dead has got as many seasons as it wants right now. So long as they do, they can continue a good storyline and keep having, you know, good actors on there. They can go as long as they want. The only thing they need to do is keep Rick alive, because essentially it's Rick's story. So you can kill, and the comic book goes this way too, you can kill all the characters. You can't kill Rick, because the story is essentially Rick's story. And as long as they keep doing good, I mean, comic book wise, you know, they've got, they're probably around issue, that, you know, following probably up to around the mid-30s. The comic book is over 100 issues now, 100, you know, it's in the 110s at this point. So you've got stories that they can go on just based on the stuff that's been in the comic book. And remember, they're not following the comic book 100%. You know, Daryl was never in the comic book. Neither was Merle. You know, Dale is still alive in the comic book. You know, Dale is still alive after the prison in the comic book. Andrea is still alive in the comic book, and we're in the 110s, you know. Dale and Andrea were supposed to get together. Shane died. They never went to Atlanta. And Shane died in the time period where they would have left to go to Atlanta. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that they've changed to be able to make the, you know, to change the story and give the TV Walking Dead its own life. But it follows the comic book enough that if they continue to follow the, you know, be parallel to the comic book, that they could go another 5, 6, 7 years easy, as long as they keep everything interesting.
Yeah, I can definitely see that, because like you said, you know, this isn't something like Breaking Bad. On the first episode, we knew Walter White had cancer. And so we knew, you know, that there was a finite amount of time that the story was going to be told. But with this, as long as you keep Rick alive, as long as you keep Carl alive, I think, you know, everybody else is an interchangeable piece to keep the story going.
Right, and you could develop Carl enough to the point where Rick doesn't have to, you know, Rick doesn't have to live.
And Carl kills him.
Well, Carl killed him, you know. I'm surprised he hasn't killed him already. His dad's a bitch. It's a crazy bitch sitting there fucking trees. Like, you know, I mean, he sits there and sees the ghost of his wife and starts pulling his pants down and having sex with trees because he thinks that's his wife. Carl, you know, I mean, seriously, if you figure Carl grows into manhood, right? He's 12, 13 years old, so he really needs only to be, you know, to make it another 3 or 4 years where he's 16, 17 years old. And at that point, he's in this kind of a world, he's a man already, but you have to have him be able to have a love interest and to have sex so that he can have a baby and take care of it, you know. But once he's of that age where he can get a partner, he doesn't. It becomes his story at that point, you know.
Yeah, maybe he hooks up with Michonne. He like that brown sugar.
You know what? Who doesn't? I'm the first one to say, who doesn't like? Don't even start me up, bro. It's that kind of podcast.
that'll be for the bonus episode.
that'll be for the King of Sports After Hours.
Yeah, gotta have that, man.
So one of the things I really like about Torres versus Zombie is the survival tips and like I think you know the new shows are great. I really love the interaction between you and John. But if somebody right. wants to get into your show, I think they really owe it to themselves to go back from the very beginning because you did a lot of establishing the zombie world that you were going to talk about and survival tips. And one of the coolest episodes out of those early shows when you were talking about getting your team together.
Right.
And you're like, you know, you don't want a big team. You want a small unit. So, you know, let's say a zombie apocalypse happened right now and it was you and me and Alfred and Marcus, you know, what would one of the first things we need to do? What would we have to do, Torres?
Find a woman. I mean, that's four guys, bro. It gets lonely.
I'll go first.
The first thing that we'd have to do is we'd have to establish an expertise, okay? Something we'd have to all learn general knowledge, but we each have to get an expertise. Like one of us has to become a mechanic. One of us has to become an agricultural person. One of us has to become a doc, a medical guy. One of us has to become a the various things that we're going to need. And then everybody else has to learn enough to get by, because you're going to need that. It doesn't, like, we can't all be medics and none of us know how to grow food. You know? You can't. We can't all be mechanics and none of us know, you know, how to take care of how to set a bone. So you got to have that variety. And I think if we got together, and I don't know Alfred and I don't know Marcus, and yeah, you and I have a pretty casual relationship, Nate, I think the first thing we'd have to do is establish some kind of expertise. And then from there, work on that. The second thing that we have to do is that we have to be able to not take things personal. A natural leadership will arise, and you have to really be honest with knowing your place. You know, if Nate comes along and he's showing leadership, you know, then I have to back down if you're making the right decisions, you know, and checking your ego. That's going to be what, trust me, that's going to be one of the biggest things that's going to be a problem is people checking their ego.
You hear that, Alfred?
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
What, Alfred got a big ego?
I have no idea. It's been an accusation, but it's held up in court and I was acquitted. But you sound like you know what you're talking about. Oh. You sound like you're talking about this. Like, do you think there's actually going to be a zombie apocalypse one day?
Oh yeah. Make no mistake about it. Now here's the thing, though. Now remember, we're talking. We're talking in 2013 about what a zombie is versus in 1968 when Night of the Living Dead first came out. Everything's a zombie today. You know, you look at 28 days later, those are infected humans. Those are considered zombies. You know, you got zombies that run. You got zombies that, parkour is, right?
Yeah.
You know that there's zombie movies that feature parkour zombies. What the fuck are you going to do against what are you going to do against a zombie that could jump down from a roof?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
What happened to the old zombies that would walk real slow?
And that's what I say. See, when I talk about zombie, and you know, and I do lectures on zombie survival, and I always call my stuff survival for the fat guy, or survival for the rest of us. And because according to everything that's out there, you got to be a Navy SEAL or retired Navy SEAL to survive an apocalypse. You know, and the reality is not against the zombies that we can beat. Now remember, zombies started in 1968 with Night of the Living Dead, okay? Those zombies are slow-moving, flesh-eating, dumb. Shoot them in the head, and they're gone.
Right? Can you kill the brain, you kill the ghoul. That's the quote from the movie. They take over the world. Those zombies take over the world. Why do you have to add running? Why do they need to talk? No. So I dismiss that automatically. Because if that happens, then we are dead. You know? Give me the slow-moving zombies and I got a fighting chance. But anyway, in 2013, everything's a zombie. So when you start to talk about infected humans as zombies and having zombie-like traits, yeah, that could happen. I interviewed a guy named Matt Moak. He's an author who wrote a book called Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Zombies. He told me how he interviewed the outgoing head of the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, and he asked, could zombies happen? And she laughed at him and said, give me 10 minutes, I could get rid of the entire United States. You don't think I could come up with something to make an infected human?
Wow.
10 minutes. Hmm. You know? So you take something like mad cow disease. And here's the thing, in nature, viruses and bacteria mutate all the time, and they jump species all the time. So if you don't think that something like mad cow disease can't mutate with rabies and with the common cold or flu and then jump into the human species where somebody catches it, sneezes it, and puts it out in the air and then goes crazy, you don't think that can happen in nature? You see it in the insect world already. You see where you have these zombie ants and these zombie wasps and, you know, these insects that essentially get into the brain of another insect and take control of it and use it for whatever it wants to use it. I mean, that happens. That happens in nature right now. So can something like a 28 days later happen? Hell yeah. Oh, she got serious now, didn't it?
Yeah. I was gonna say, I have never heard Alfred this quiet. For the people out there that haven't heard before we let you go, brother, let them know a little bit about the show and where they can find it.
Okay, the show, wow, you know what? I've never been on the receiving end of that. plug your shit, son. the show Tourist vs. Zombies is all things zombies. It's 50% pop culture, 50% survival, 100% zombies. John Mechtel, who's also known as Johnny Canada, and myself, also known as Ronnie Mexico. You know, that's my hat, tipping my hat off to my boy, Vic.
Shout out to Mike.
If he never caught herpes, I wouldn't have a nickname. But anyway, we talk a lot about zombies, and we have a lot of fun. And in it, I play myself, a paranoid guy who believes the Illuminati's out there, and that the zombie apocalypse is going to happen, you know, December 15th. And Mechtel's the guy who's grounded in reality. But we talk a lot of fun stuff, a lot of jokes, and then a lot of zombie stuff. And then, you know, people like it. We got a world, we're worldwide, baby. We got fans in Australia and in England and Japan who listen to the show religiously. So we, you know, I guess we're doing all right. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, maybe being on this show, Alfred's big in the African community. Maybe that'll open you up to some Nigerian fans or some Liberian fans.
Yeah. Let me tell you, one of the reasons that Night of the Living Dead was successful is because one of the marketing plans that they did was to, back in the days of double bills, was to double bill it with blaxploitation movies because the African-American audience loves horror. You know, it's one of their favorite genres. So they figured that they would put it together with the blaxploitation movies of the early 70s and that people would bite on it and would run with it. And sure enough, it's exactly, you know, part of what happened.
I'm telling you,
yeah?
I was going to say, a movie that I'm actually interested in, I don't know if it's actually in production, but I know he's been talking about it for a while, is Michael Jai White from Black Dynamite. He wanted to make a zombie movie.
Really?
Yeah, he wants to make a 70s black zombie movie.
Dude, if he makes it with, like, the boom mics coming in and the bad cutting, oh, my God, bro. I loved Black Dynamite. And if he goes and makes a zombie version of that, I'm all in. I am all in. Oh, real quick, November 22nd, guess where I'm going to be? I'm going to be in Uniontown, Pennsylvania. You know what I'm going to be there for? I'm going to be there for the premiere. Opening night, baby. Pro wrestlers versus zombies.
What?
Wow.
I am walking the red carpet in Uniontown, PA. And guess who's going to be at the premiere and the after party? Rowdy Roddy Piper.
Wow.
Matt Hardy. Who else is going to be there? Hacksaw Jim Duggan. And the movie also has those guys, and it's got Raven, Shane Douglas.
Oh, what about Raven?
What about Raven? I can't wait to see this movie. It's going to be awesome. So I'm going down to the premiere to go check that out.
That's November 22nd in Uniontown?
In Uniontown, PA. And if you want to check out Tours vs. Zombies, you can get on iTunes or Stitcher, or you can go to the Face. I don't do the Twitter bullshit. But you can go on.
You dropped out of Twitter.
Yeah, bro. I have too many haters on Twitter.
Tell me about it. You have no idea. Like for real. Like I think Boz Boneyard is still up on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can.
Yeah, Boz Boneyard. Yeah.
There's a great story on there about Alfredo Torres getting into a beef with some dude on Twitter that you gotta listen to.
Dude, I'll tell you, if I ever meet that guy, I'll stab him in the throat. nothing aggravates me more than somebody who will hide behind a name and then sit there and attack you. and Nate will tell you, Alfred, I've always been Alfredo Torres. It doesn't matter. I'm Ronnie Mexico on Facebook only because I had to get a real job. But I'm afraid everything I've ever done in entertainment, I've done radio, I've done videos, I've always been Alfredo Torres. Yeah, my face is out there. I don't hide from anybody. So if I sit here and I go, yo, Alfred, you're a bitch, you can sit there and look me up. And you know this is Alfredo Torres talking to you. Now, I'm not gonna hide under the name, you know, Lexicon Starship, and then sit there and say, yo, Alfred, you a bitch, and then have a picture of the moon. You know what I'm saying? So you don't know who the hell I am. You don't know what I look like, and I'm going to sit there and make fun of you. Nothing aggravates me more than that. And so that's what this guy was doing, and I essentially called him a bitch and, you know, said, I'm going to fuck your wife and kiss your mother and things like that and piss all over your sister. And, you know, and if you want to be a man and come face me, you know where I'm at. You know what I look like. And then the guy kept going, you bitch, you big tough guy, you bitch. Dude, look at my picture. I'm not a big tough guy. I'm 5'2", 106 pounds. All right, that's a lie. I'm 5'11", 260. But still.
Now, if you've never seen Torres before, he looks like he would have been a perfect wrestling manager back in the 80s.
Yes.
Like a Puerto Rican Lou Albano.
That's exactly what I would have been. And I've done wrestling commentary for like the NWA Fusion down here, and I dress up essentially like Jesse the Body Ventura, you know. So I've got that kind of a personality. In case you haven't figured it out, so.
Well, we want to. Go ahead.
Okay. Oh well, also I said all that, but I forgot to tell people you can get if you guys want to hang out with me, you know, talk to me on Facebook. Ronnie Mexico is the name for me personally, and if you want to know about Tours vs. Zombies, go on Facebook, Tours vs. Zombies. We're very interactive. Starting on Sunday, we'll be doing our Walking Dead thread, so
you
can jump
on
in.
What's the Zombie League?
Zombie Fantasy League. Yep, we're doing, we got to sign those. Now, you gotta get on there. You gotta get on there. Send your team now. And what we do is, for those of you who don't know, we know that fantasy leagues are the big deal, especially for you sports guys. So the way to bring in zombies and fantasy league sports is we started a zombie fantasy league. And what we do is every week people draw up a draft from characters of The Walking Dead. And then we set you up against two people. So, like, Alfred, you could have three guys, and Nate would have three guys. Mm-hmm. And they're three different guys. And so we set you up head to head. So this week, we see whose people kills the most zombies, and that's how you win.
Wow. That sounds amazing.
It's awesome. And then, and we did. Right, and because we have it, like, Rick is a big zombie killer, and so is Daryl. So because we have a draft, if it's like you two guys, like, okay, so you get, you know, Alfred, you get Rick, but then Nate gets Daryl. And then after that, you start to get, you know, you could get Herschel, who might kill some zombies, but most of the time he won't. And then Nate gets Carl, who might kill some zombies, but most of the time he won't. And then finally you get Carol, who rarely kills zombies, and he gets, you know, the other daughter, whatever the hell her name is, who rarely kills zombies, you know? And then we go and we see what happens at the episode, because nobody knows what's going to happen, you know? It's like a football game. It's like a baseball game. Huh? You know, we haven't put that aspect in, but because you know you're going to get a superstar, a good utility man, and a scrub, you don't really want to trade, because what are you going to do? You're going to trade Rick for Daryl? The minute you trade him might be the episode that comes up where Rick kills everybody.
Yeah, but I was going to say, maybe I'll read the spoilers and I'll know who's going to kill who, and then I'll take the Carl.
But no, there's no spoilers because there isn't. You're not going to, I mean, nobody's going to trade you, because any spoilers you get, they're going to get too. Because if anything, they're going to get them on you, because these are people who are really into zombies. So they're out there, you know, looking for every little bit that comes out with them, that comes out on the media. Like right now, there's a scene in which Tyrese goes nuts. And so there are people going, I want Tyrese. And it's short-sighted. That's one episode. You know? So Tyrese might go nuts and he might win you that episode, but you're playing him the whole season. What's he going to do the rest of the season?
Plus he's black, so he might not last the whole season.
Well, you know what? I'm glad you said it. Because you know nobody else could talk about it. But now that you brought it up, ain't that a bitch? I do not. You know what? If my color is darker, because I'm but a pecan tan. Yeah, I'm a pretty bronze man. So you don't want to be my color or darker in the Walking Dead world, because you know you ain't gonna last, and you don't want to get into a position of authority or respect.
I would say T-Dog didn't last too long.
The minute he started speaking, and showing wisdom, you got to go. And the other thing you don't want to do is you don't want to show an interest in Carol.
Yeah.
No, you don't. Oh yeah, you know that the minute you go, damn, she's hot, pull in the head, zombie biting your throat, something. Fuck around with that girl. That's a black widow right there.
Man, so, does Carol get points for the people that she gets killed?
No, you know, maybe. Well, here's the thing. If a character kills another character, like, here's the point. You get certain points for killing a zombie, and you get certain points for killing a human, and then you get certain points for killing one of the characters, a named character. So so if Carol ends up killing somebody, you know, you're not going to get points for that. But if that person ends up, like when, what's his name? Got killed by the governor who was talking to her. The white guy who was the white prisoner.
Yeah. And then he turned into the zombie.
Right. He got shot. Why? Because he was talking to her. So that whoever had the governor got points for that. You know. So you know that
I
if somebody.
I think Carol should get the assist, like Stockton on that one.
We ain't ready to kind of branch out to start adding those kind of rules. We gotta get this system down before we get to the point where we can start throwing designated hitters and, you know, that kind of shit. But it's fun. People had a great time last season, and we're doing it up again this season, so we'll see what happens.
I think Alfred might start watching The Walking Dead so he can play in the league now.
Sure.
Well, what we're going to do is, you know, because the season's broken into two halves, you know, you can watch it. go find me on go like Toys vs. Zombies on Facebook and just watch what happens. And then you can jump in next year in February when it starts back up for the second half.
All right, again, that is Torres versus Zombies on Facebook. You can check them out on iTunes and Stitcher and all the usual places. It's mm-hmm. a great show, and if you enjoyed our chat with Brother Torres, I know you'll like his show. Especially, like, I'm a casual zombie fan, and I love his show. So if you're a hardcore, like, you watch every episode of The Walking Dead 3 or 4 times, and you break down the clues and everything, I know you'll love his show as well. So, we appreciate you spending some time with us, brother, and maybe next time you come on, Marcus will be around.
Well, you know what? I thank you guys for having me. I had a lot of fun, and I was scared, too, because I was, like, actually reading up on sports. I was, like, reading shit on soccer and Australian rules football, so I didn't come on. Sounded like a dumbass, you know? But I really had fun. Anytime you guys want to have me back, I'd be more than happy to, because you guys are a lot of fun. But Brother Nate, you know how I feel about you. There's a reason that I, you know, that you're Brother Nate.
You know, it's us two men with mutual respect and love and admiration for each other, if you will.
If you will, you understand. And now I think I might have to call Brother Alfred. I might have to move him up into that area, you understand.
Yeah.
Way to fuck that one up there. Way to Caucasianize that there, Alfred.
Like, yeah. I like that.
Yes.
I approve of that statement.
Yes.
Oh, man. Well, that is the great, the one and only Silver Fox, Alfredo Torres. Again, Torres vs. Zombies. Check out his show. You can also... check him out on Facebook again at Torres vs. Zombies. And if you're in Uniontown, Pennsylvania on the 22nd of November, go holler at your boy.
Holler at your boy. I'll be there. Trust me, you ain't going to miss me. I'm that damn sexy.
All right, so that's Alfredo Torres. We are the Kings of Sport, and we'll be back right after these messages.
And now, it's time to get you caught up on the week's biggest stories from the world of professional wrestling. It's the Ringside Wrap on the Kings of Sport.
And welcome back to the Kings of Sport. This is your 5-time fantasy football champion. We're having fun today with the fact that I finally lost this season. And look, I built a team for the playoffs. You know, I suck this weekend. There's nothing more to say about it, but I wasn't the only thing that sucked this weekend. Battleground was held this weekend, Sunday night, and on the Ringside Wrap, I'm sure that's going to dominate a lot of our discussion. A lot of people chiming in that Battleground was like a $55 episode of Raw. That's been the consensus. We don't necessarily have to go in that direction. What really grinded my gears was the simple fact that Stephanie McMahon and Triple H were not present at the pay-per-view, and that's how they were telling the story. Now, Marcus and Nate, I want to open it up to you, starting with Marcus. Do you think it's a big deal that WWE booked the pay-per-view to where the top two authority figures were nowhere to be found?
It was a little odd. It says a lot about the pay-per-view itself. You know, you wouldn't see Triple H and Stephanie missing out on SummerSlam or Mania or Royal Rumble for a quote-unquote emergency meeting. So I think that tells you all you need to know about Battleground, which I did not watch. So I'm not going to be one of those guys who complains, because I feel like most of the people who are complaining didn't pay for the pay-per-view. So what are you complaining about? Your time? I mean, come on. So
Nate, I was going to see if Nate paid for the pay-per-view. Did you?
I ordered my pay-per-view through my company, Nefarious Means, a wonderful, upstanding cable company. And I even with the blackout, I didn't ask for a refund.
I actually think the blackout may have been a better finish than what was given to us. Let's get into the finish. Basically, for the second pay-per-view in a row, we are left without a WWE champion because Big Show came, crashed the party, knocked out Daniel Bryan, knocked out Scott Armstrong, knocked out Randy Orton, knocked out everybody's wallet, and we are left without a champion. What are your thoughts on the finish, Brother Nate?
I mean, I didn't think we were going to get a clean finish anyway, because this is, like we've been saying for weeks, you know, this is the second show out of three shows within a month and a half period. And, you know, first of all, that's too many shows. You know, it feels like a bunch of extended Raws instead of building towards a culmination or an extension of a feud. That being said, you know, I don't mind what Big Show did in terms of his character, but in regards to the story with Daniel Bryan, it just feels like they're slowly but surely squandering the momentum that this guy has. You know, I think he's still popular with the fans, but, you know, how many times are we going to believe the boy that cried wolf in terms of Daniel Bryan winning the championship? So I don't know if, you know, and judging by who's on the horizon, I don't know if Bryan's going to get, you know, that big moment. So, you know, I don't really think that they did themselves any favors. I think it would have been better if they had done, you know, maybe a tag match or something to keep the feud going, but keep the title out of it. But, you know, there needs to be a definite winner at Hell in a Cell. So maybe the legend referee, a.k.a. the Deer Hunter, can make sure that happens.
And if there is a definitive winner at Hell in a Cell, and it is Daniel Bryan, Marcus, will you care?
I would care, yeah. And let's be real. There's going to be a definitive winner. They're not going to do this until Survivor Series. Trust me. I think they already, as you can tell by Raw this past week, you can tell they're feeling the backlash by the way they booked that show and with everything they had on going on in terms of Cena and Shawn Michaels. So there will be a winner at this pay-per-view. I think it will be Bryan. And I think the reason that they're putting Cena with Del Rio is to sort of give Bryan his own spotlight. And they don't want to steal his thunder just yet because, you know, this isn't really Bryan's fault that they're rushing Cena back. I guess indirectly it could be, but he's still worthy of having his time with the belt. and time by longer than a day and a minute or day and 5 minutes or whatever it's been. So, yeah, I will care if Bryan does win, and I think he needs to really, you know, hurt Randy Orton to really sell over the fact that he you know, has taken down, you know, Randy Orton, and he's taken down this feud that has gone on for way too long, almost 3 months now.
In case you haven't heard, a pay-per-view from TNA coming up in a couple of weeks called Bound for Glory. I don't know if you guys have heard, and I'm looking at this card, not bad. You got Bully Ray against AJ Styles, you got Magnus and Sting, you got Bobby Roode versus Kurt Angle, but it just doesn't feel like TNA's biggest pay-per-view of the year. It doesn't feel like we've gone on a journey to this card. So, Nate, being the TNA apologist you are, defend to me Bound for Glory and why I should watch.
I'd say from a match-wise, it has the potential to be excellent, especially, you know, adding Samoa Joe to that Ultimate X match. I think that storyline-wise, though, it's been a mess for at least the past month, probably longer. I do think there are some cool elements. Sting, if this is his last match with the company, you know, we see the contrast between the way Hogan left in terms of booking himself to be bigger than the organization and the way Sting leaves in terms of putting over a young guy that he believes in. So I think the actual card will be great. You know, if you feel like supporting TNA, call up your cable provider or, you know, holler at Nefarious Means. They have worldwide distribution.
That's not supporting TNA. What are you talking about?
Maybe their content, not their business.
Hey, I'm a realist. I want people to watch the show, so I would love for them to pay full price for the show. But if they got to go with that discount triple check, if you will, hey, so be it. But yeah, I think this whole deal with Hogan and heel Dixie and all of that is. it casts a cloud over the show. There's not a lot of juice, but I do think it should be a good show, Marcus.
Yeah. I mean, if this is Sting's final match, they have not done a good job of selling that fact. You know, I mean, if Sting loses and that it ends up to be it, it seems like a waste of Sting in terms of how to get the most out of his final match. You should be hyping this thing up to be, you know, if Sting loses, he's done, or some stipulation in a match. I wouldn't want to see him to go out just on, you know, sadly, just on Bound for Glory, because it feels like they should get at least more, you know, out of him. Besides that, I have no interest in Bully Ray AJ Styles. Kurt Angle coming back might be interesting. But I mean, overall, I mean, we originally had plans to go down to San Diego for this pay-per-view. And now I'm on the borderline about even watching it, illegally. So, that's how far it's fallen in the span of a summer.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm kind of with you, Marcus. I'm with Nate too, in a sense that it does look like a very good wrestling card. Just on paper, it's just these matches should be very good. But TNA, what I like about them is usually, with all their faults, they are always able to follow a long-term plan and stick to it. Whether or not fans agree with it, whether or not it may make sense, they have a plan and they stick to it, and there's destination programming. But with Bound for Glory, I think with Hogan's contract being up, with all of these movable parts, AJ Styles' contract situation, I feel like everything's been thrown out of control. There's been like a monkey wrench thrown into this plan, and it just doesn't seem like a WrestleMania-type card for TNA, which is unfortunate. But I'm sure it'll be a good wrestling show. Now, I would like to apologize to both of you, because when I kicked off this segment, dummy me forgot to introduce you the way you deserve to be introduced, Marcus the Unicorn Vandenberg, and the Godfather Nate Milton, two of the best in the world when it comes to sports and entertainment. And I'd like to personally congratulate Marcus for his great nomination. Hats off to you, Marcus. It's a great honor. And I'm such a diva that I forgot to introduce you guys. But in our next segment, we're going to
talk about... Hold on. First of all, you know, again, shout out to Marcus. It's been a big weekend for Brother Marcus, winning fantasy money and receiving fellowship. So, big up to Marcus. But one last quick point about TNA. If you noticed, I don't know how many people rarely go to the Panda Energy website.
Never been.
But there's a big change in terms of if you look at their board of directors or their leadership structure. Somebody gone.
Uh-oh.
Daddy Bob is gone. Janice Carter is now the top person on that list, whereas if you looked a week or so ago, Bob Carter would have been that first name, but now he gone. So I don't know what kind of impact that would have on TNA, no pun intended, but if a sale is imminent, you know, she has been all about trimming costs and that bottom line. So, you know, maybe TNA will be looking to sell. So I don't know what kind of investors are out there looking, but it would be interesting to see if Bob Carter, I don't know if he stepped down or took a step to the side, or Janice was just like, hey, you gone, son. But it'd be interesting to see what effect that has on TNA.
Well, I really hope that depressing news was worth it, because I was brilliantly setting up a transition into segment four in a self-deprecating fashion by calling myself a diva. And as I was saying, which great news, great breaking news, Nate.
No, hold on, Alfred. I'm really happy for you, and I'm going to let you finish, dog. I mean, segment three, the ringside rap was cool, but segment four had one of the best segments of all time, fam. One of the best segments of all time.
Segment four, coming up.
Don't believe in shooting stars, but she believe in shoes and cars. Wood floors in the new apartment, coupe tour from the store's departments. You more like love to start shit. I'm more of the trips to Florida, order the hors d'oeuvres, views of the water, straight from a page of your favorite author. And the weather's so breezy, man, why can't life always be this easy? She in the mirror dancing so sleazy. I get a call like, where are you, Yeezy? And try to hit you with the old wapty, till I got flashed by the paparazzi. Dang, these niggas got me. I hate these niggas more
as
than
I
Nazi.
Call, I know you love to show off, but I never thought that you would take it this far. What do I know?
Try to antagonize me, because you know what? It's not safe for you in this zoo. You know, never think that I'm not from Chicago for one second. You do help me get money, paparazzi, you know what I'm saying? You show people how fresh my outfit is. It helps me influence people.
We are back on the Kings of Sport, ready to close up shop for another great week. But before we do, we got to end it as we do each and every week with the one and only, often imitated but never ever duplicated, segment four. And before we get to that, we got to take care of some business. And shout out to good people at Audible.com. Now, Audible.com is the premier provider of digital audiobooks with over 100,000 titles to choose from in every genre. We're talking about thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and many, many more. Audible titles play on your iPhone, your Kindle, your Android, and more than 500 devices for listening anytime, anywhere. And for you guys, the listeners of the Kings of Sport podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. They got some great titles like The War for Late Night, The Witness, Gone Girl, Last Season, The Hobbit, Star Trek in the Darkness. And any title, sports, like I said, man, if you are into books but you don't have the time to, you know, to go out there and read that literature, but you do, you know, you're on the run, you're mobile. This is a mobile society. It's a mobile world. There's a lot of creative geniuses out there. So put your earbuds in and listen to your favorite novel, your favorite autobiography, your favorite sports book from the good people at Audible.com. And you can do that when you download your free Audible trial. So to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport. Again, that's audibletrial.com/thekingsofsport for your free audiobook. Audible is down with the Kings. You guys are down with the Kings. So get down with audible.com. And like I said, you know, this is a mobile society. You know, this is that internet social media society. And, you know, it's hard being creative, Marcus. And you know, I know because I don't want to brag or nothing, but you could say I'm a creative genius. And there's moments when I stood up to drug dealers here in Virginia and said, you can't have my podcast, man. You can come and kill me. Do what you're going to do, but you're not going to bully me, fam. Because when people hear my podcast, they have a good time, and I should be respected as such when I walk down the street.
Tanya's going to come after you, know that, right?
Hey, it's turned about his fair play. He samples people's songs. I sample his rants. So obviously, Kanye on Kimmel was the big story from the week in terms of pop culture. And Twitter, of course, blew up. It was a surreal program. I guess the whole show was dedicated to the quote-unquote beef between Jimmy and Kanye. And Yeezy came in and sat down and talked as only Kanye can talk. And for those that missed it, Brother Marcus, let the people know some of the highlights of Kanye on Kimmel.
Yeah, so the interview was probably 30 minutes minus the 22 minutes of commercials that they crammed in there for some reason. You know, Kanye was, you know, pretty honest about his thoughts about being a celebrity, how he feels that celebrities are treated like zoo animals, which I do agree with, especially in this town of Los Angeles. Kimmel decided to sort of backtrack and pretty much, you know, let the people know how much he defends Kanye when he's not, you know, on TV, to let people know that he's actually a good guy and he's not a jerk. There was this one moment where Kimmel told people, he was like, you know, most people think you're a jerk. And they cut to Kanye's face and I was like, uh-oh, this might be the part where he snaps. But Kanye handled it well. I think he understood where Kimmel was coming from. I think Kimmel understood where Kanye was coming from. But, you know, you mentioned the creative genius line. There are some lines, some Kanye-isms that he dropped where he let you know that he is a genius. And he, he went on a couple tangents. But, you know, overall, I understand where this guy is coming from. I'm not one of the people who criticize Kanye for how he acts to the paparazzi and stuff. I think the really telling thing about this whole situation with the paparazzi was maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago, the paparazzi showed up at his house at like 4 o'clock in the morning. He was still going to catch a flight, and he was, you know, getting in his car to go to the airport, and the paparazzi are out in front of his house, and he, of course, he snapped. He did physical this time, but he basically was like, don't talk to me. Like, if you want to take your pictures, fine, but that doesn't mean you should be able to speak to me, you know. So I suggest you check out the interview if you want to get a better sense of where Kanye is coming from. I know he's a, sort of a polarizing figure, and, you know, either you like Kanye or you don't like Kanye. I tend to like Kanye. I think his music is great. He's a bit of a nutcase, but I think most creative geniuses are a nutcase, so.
Yeah, and he's also very emotionally unstable. It's funny because you talk about him being a genius. I think he's a genius too. And I know both in his music and the way he behaves is that he's very, very introverted. You listen to how he performs and you watch him on stage and he seems like he would be an extrovert, especially when you hear his rants. But then you see him on Jimmy Kimmel after he's gone on Twitter in an all caps rant and they're hashing out their differences. And Kanye once again is quiet and reserved and he's a little bit awkward. And I just wish it would have been more comedy. I wish there had been more comedy involved instead of this peace kumbaya ceremony that they had where Jimmy Kimmel's basically airing out his grievances with Kanye West. I mean, I thought it was pretty riveting TV to watch. And Marcus, you mentioned that there was 22 minutes of commercials because they knew this was going to be one of the higher rated episodes of the year and the sponsors wanted to get their money.
Well, I really thought Kanye might have walked out. There was one stretch of commercials where it had to be at least 5 minutes, and I was like, "Uh-oh, something must have happened," and Kanye left. But then I said, "Well, the show isn't live anymore," so
yeah,
I figured they were just cramming it in. But yeah, it was riveting TV. I haven't watched Kimmel in a long time. I can't tell you the last time I watched the show, so it brought me in. And you know, props to him for getting him on the show so quickly after that whole incident happened.
And mm-hmm. You mentioned the comedy. There was one comedy piece within the body of the interview where they did a bit where Josh Groban sang the tweets of Kanye West, which was pretty funny, and Kanye handled it pretty well. But I think that there's a couple different layers here. First of all, like you mentioned, Alfred, I think that Kanye, I'm not going to say he's bipolar, but I do think that there's there's Kanye West, the person, but there's also Kanye West, the entertainer and the designer and the mogul. And sometimes those two characteristics kind of come into conflict. I think one of the telling things was, it was a few years back after his mother had passed. And, it might've been after the Taylor Swift deal when he was on Leno. And, you know, Jay was like, you know, what would your mom have thought about this? It was on Jay Leno's 10 o'clock show. And Kanye actually, you know, teared up and opened up to Jay. I think there's an aspect of Kanye that, there's a psychiatrist would have a field day, you know, going inside that brain and seeing what's popping. Geniuses, like you mentioned, are often messy. Creative types are often messy. Black creative types, especially black male creative types, tend to be messier than most because there's a lot of different factors and things going on there. There's also a part of me that thinks Kanye might be kind of Andy Kaufman-ing us in a way, in terms of playing up these controversies, quote unquote, or these beefs to create a buzz, and he's playing the media. He's playing the fans. He's playing the Twitterverse in some aspect.
I don't see it.
I
saw a lot of raw emotions on that show. I don't think, no, that he'd be a super genius if he were able to just turn
Wile E. Coyote,
yeah.
Super genius.
No. I mean, parts of the interview was hard to watch because you could tell he was just being super raw and super honest, and It was part of a therapy session.
Like is he trolling us? Like when he's like, Kim Kardashian should be on the Walk of Fame, y'all.
Well, that's his wife. I mean, that wouldn't surprise me if she was on the Walk of Fame. We're talking about Hollywood.
Are we putting porn stars on the Walk of Fame now?
Have you seen some of the people on the Walk of Fame in her hair? Trust me, she would be above a lot of people.
That and the art of being famous. I think Kim Kardashian is very talented at what she does. Look at all the people who are quote unquote more talented, or even in like the field of music, whether it be movies. You see Oscar winners win Oscars every year and then they're gone the next year. Remaining famous in this age of social media and 24-hour news cycles is extremely difficult. And Kim Kardashian has done it since she had that sex tape with Ray J, which was years ago. And she knows what she's doing. It's not just luck. She actually has a brand that she manages. She knows where she's ranked on Google at all times because of this app that she created on her iPad. And I give props to her, and I do think she should be in the Walk of Fame.
By the way, Walk of Fame people, the Rugrats, Seacrest, Disneyland, the Steve Miller Band, John Tesh.
Oh, don't hate on Steve Miller Band.
Yeah, yeah, Steve Miller Band's going on.
And Strongheart the Dog. So yeah, Kim Kardashian could make the Hall of the Walk of Fame, and it wouldn't.
Strongheart was a good actor, but I heard behind the scenes he was a bit of a bitch.
And Rick Dees for all you
Rick Dees in the weekly top 40.
Yeah, so yeah, she didn't make it. It doesn't take much. All it takes really is money. You have to pay to get your star up there, but
yeah,
she's at the money.
If the Rugrats are on there and Kim Kardashian is on there, how much would it take for the Kings of Sport to get a star on the Walk of Fame? How many fantasy leagues would you have to win so we could buy a star on the Walk of Fame, Marcus?
It'd take a few more podcasts. Well, a lot more. I think it's like 25,000. But it would take a lot more podcasts before...
We're currently the longest-running independently produced black podcast.
I think that speaks to something. I think whoever wins the fantasy football this league this year would be on top to where, you know, you have the Kings of Sport, and then you have their names, and mine would be on top after I win the league.
Oh, man.
Sure.
Yeah, sure. The other thing about the interview I was thinking about was, Kimmel, like you mentioned, was very conciliatory, and he mentioned some behind-the-scenes stuff, like with his dad, met Kanye, I guess, at one of his staffers' weddings, and Kanye was nice to him and everything. But there's a part of me that maybe I'm being cynical. It's like I think he really was being genuine in moments, but he was also – you know, he also knew what he had here in terms of, you know, publicity for his own show, which, like you mentioned, when the last time you really was checking for Jimmy Kimmel? So I think there's a shrewdness about it. There is maybe an opportunistic bent to it in terms of Jimmy Kimmel. And so I think, you know, props for him extending the olive branch, but I also don't think it was some, you know, magnanimous gesture by the Jimmy Kimmel team.
You think Kimmel did the whole skit in hopes of setting this up, or you think just inviting him on wasn't sincere?
I think inviting him on wasn't. I think the skit was just a skit. Like I don't think you know he had it. He maybe in his wildest dreams he imagined Kanye would react like that, but I think that was just a happy coincidence. I think him inviting him on, you know, because we've seen Jimmy can be a bit of a troll at times, like when he did the Jay Leno deal. Not only dressing up like Leno, but when he showed up on Jay Leno's show and basically ethered Jay on his own program. So Jimmy's got a bit of that type of sensationalistic streak in him. And I think, you know, he knew, hey, this is going to be great ratings. And if Kanye and I make up, cool. If I piss him off, that's even better.
And this goes back to the Kim Kardashian discussion that Kanye doesn't seem like the mastermind type, so I'm sure Jimmy Kimmel wanted to set this up and his people, but the reason that it happened so quickly and there was such a quick turnaround, because if you look at the tweets, really, Kanye West is the one who's angry. It's a one-way conversation. Jimmy Kimmel is just feeding him just enough to keep that machine going. So I wouldn't imagine Kanye West wanting to be around Jimmy Kimmel after that argument, but I'm sure Kim Kardashian got in his ear like, hey, this is going to keep you relevant. Your record sales were down this year. Maybe if you go on to this TV show, they're going to be talking about it everywhere, and you're going to be back on top.
And I think it helps that Kimmel had a relationship with Kanye in the past. So I think if it was someone who he didn't know at all, it probably wouldn't be this fast. But I think because he knew Kanye outside of the industry, that he, you know, decided to extend the olive branch there.
Yeah, that, it was a boon for the network. Again, not just speaking of the advertising revenue, but they also made it a point. I don't know if Nightline was the new show that followed it, but they made it a point to promote a piece on Kanye West, a feature on Kanye West. And, you know, the whole evening during Nightline, you loved him on Kimmel. Wait till you hear what he's doing next. And then it just turned out to be some 3-minute piece talking about his recent controversies. So, you know, they made their money that night.
In terms of the ratings, he did a 1.2 last night. Between the coveted 18 to 49 age group, Leno did a 0.7, Letterman did a 0.5. So, he saw a big boost from the interview.
And that's one of the few times that, at least in that demographic, that Kimmel, you know, has come out on top. So, big up to Jimmy Kimmel. I'm not a big fan of his show, but you know, it was a smart move. And you know, in a room full of geniuses, that may have been the most genius move yet to have Kanye West show up on the show. So let's end off the show with the return of the list. And this week's list,
going off of our great discussion earlier about the MLB playoffs, I wanted to take it to the world of your favorite. We've done favorite baseball movies before, which Marcus kind of, you know, we're not going to go there. He don't watch movies.
I gave you three movies.
We're going to go to the your favorite fictional baseball players, and this could be from the world of movies, television, video games, in case you want to put in any montages, Marcus, cartoons, whatever your favorite fictional baseball player is, maybe the world of literature and some prose, Casey at the bat, whatever your favorite baseball player is, that's what we're talking about this week. We got your feedback, but we also have our own choices, and since he's been having a bad week, let's start with Brother Ducky.
Yay. Well, I'm going to start
Ducky,
with...
you're the one.
Thank you, Nate. I feel better already. I'm going to start with Ham Porter of The Sandlot, which is a movie that instantly reminds me of childhood. I've always had a soft spot for children who are cast as the fat guy. I just kind of think in the back of my mind, maybe I'm overthinking it, but I think, man, what is this going to do to his psyche that he's just little? He's too young to be dealing with his weight on the scale, but he played that role perfectly, and he was a fun-loving little porky child, and The Sandlot is just one of my favorite movies of all time.
Were you a fat kid?
I was not, but I have sympathy for those children who are overweight. I just think it's wrong. I mean, imagine that. They're casting people. Yeah, we need a little fat kid. And then the parents bring him to the studio like, oh, I got a little fat kid. Why don't you cast him?
They didn't pay, right?
Yeah, they're getting paid.
Yeah, they didn't have
it's a rough process.
So I'm not shedding no tears for no fat kids.
I was fat for 3 years.
They weren't paying Nate to be fat. Come on.
You know what I'm saying?
It didn't work.
You can't knock the hustle, I guess. Number two, I'm going to go with Bobby Rayburn. Every chance I get when we talk about baseball movies, I'm going to promote The Fan. I think it's one of the most underrated movies of all time with one of the most underrated actors of all time in Wesley Snipes. It's a movie that is very, very, very creepy about a fan who just follows this guy everywhere, and Bobby Rayburn is the star player in that movie, and it's just watch the movie. I'm doing this simply to promote the movie, and he's a great character. And I'm going to go with Roger Dorn because I've always had a proclivity towards heels. And Roger Dorn of Major League, we've got to give him a shout out because Charlie Sheen slept with his wife. I'm sure that's not the first time that it's happened behind or in front of a camera, and it's not going to be the last. But, you know, Roger Dorn is out there with Charlie Sheen is doing all these indiscretions like, Charlie Sheen was sleeping with my wife before sleeping with other people's wives was cool. And that's going to be on my list, Roger Dorn, Major League.
Okay, that's a solid list. I'll give you that. Roger Dorn was great. He actually made a babyface turn at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And then he proceeded. I think Corbin Burnson was the only player other than Serrano, Dennis Haysbert, to be in all three Major League movies. So that's a great statistic. Because he actually ended up buying the Indians minor league team in Major League 3, Back to the Minors.
You saw that movie?
Starring, what's your boy, the dude that played Jefferson Darcy that kills every show he's on?
That makes him jump the shark?
Yeah.
I know him as Jefferson Darcy. I didn't know he
whatever,
had a real
whatever his real name is, he played the manager of the Cleveland Indians, so that shows you how great that movie was.
Ted McGinley.
All the star power.
Yes. So let me go with my list now. We'll save the fantasy champ for last with Marcus Vandenberg. I'm going to give a couple quick honorable mentions, of course, to my boy Billy D. Williams, Bingo Long. If you still haven't seen it, go check it out. I'll give a shout-out to a video game baseball player, Oko, from the great NES game Bases Loaded. He was a great power hitter, decent average hitter, but you know, his big fatal flaw was if you hit him twice in a baseball game, he would charge the mound and get ejected. So he was like the Albert Bell of Bases Loaded. Very short temper. My first official person on my list is I have to go with Alfred and go to Major League, and also in a correlation with Alfred, tie into Wesley Snipes and go with Willie Mays Hayes, the original Willie Mays Hayes, not that Omar Epps trying to trick me just because he's the same skin tone. He ain't the same dude. Willie Mays Hayes was my favorite player in a movie filled with great characters. Like we mentioned, Serrano was great. Ricky Wild Thing Vaughn, Roger Dorn. I forget the pitcher, the old
pitcher that used all the grease and stuff to doctor the ball. He was a great player. But Willie Mays Hayes was my favorite because he wasn't even supposed to make the team. He showed up with all this flash and all this bravado. And they, if you remember the movie, they put his bed out in the parking lot. And Willie Mays Hayes, with no shoes, wearing his pajamas, came around and beat two other players in a 40-yard dash. And they were like, get that boy a uniform. And, you know, Willie Mays Hayes was a great counterpoint to Charlie Sheen, kind of that third wheel in that friendship with Charlie Sheen and Tom Berenger's character, Jake. So, you know, Willie Mays Hayes first on my list. Number two is a gentleman that you might not be familiar with. This was an older baseball movie, but he was a guy that was a little bit past his prime and had to go find his fortune overseas, and that's Jack Elliott. But you could just call him Mr. Baseball. Tom Selleck was an aging baseball player that was put on the trading block by the Yankees. Frank Thomas took his job, and the only team that would pick him up was the Chunichi Dragons. And, you know, he ended up going over there. Ironically, Dennis Haysbert was in that picture, too, as the big slugger for the Dragons. And Tom Selleck got to some beef with the manager, ended up sleeping with the manager's daughter, and truly becoming ingratiated to the Japanese culture. So, Mr. Baseball, it's not a great movie, but it's a solid baseball movie. And, you know, as far as Tom Selleck movies goes, it gets a thumbs up for me. And finally, I'm going to go with my man. I kind of gave a spoiler alert with the video that I posted on Facebook in terms of the topic this week, and that is Stan Ross. He's the boss. Bernie Mac from Mr. 3000, another baseball movie that's kind of, you know, it's not great, but it's solid. It's funny. You know, it's the black Mr. Baseball, basically, except instead of going to Japan, Stan Ross goes to an equally desolate place and plays for the Milwaukee Brewers.
Wow.
Woo! Wow. Take a shot there.
I will not respond to that.
And Stan Ross is a player that ended his major league career with 2,997 hits instead of 3,000. So he comes back out of retirement to get three hits. And, you know, they do the whole up and down ebb and flow with him starting off as this cocky player that can't relate to the young kids. And by the end of the movie, you know, he had a change of heart and has a great romance with Angela Bassett that plays a ESPN. I don't know if it's officially ESPN, but she plays like an ESPN reporter. Wilbon and Kornheiser do their PTI roles. They're in the movie. The best damn sports show on television. We're in the movie for some reason. And it's just a funny movie. And, you know, Stan Ross, you know, there are worse things in life than finishing with 2,997 hits and getting to sleep with Angela Bassett. So big up to Mr. 3000. So I got Stan Ross, Willie Mays Hayes, and Jack Elliott. So, well, what do you think about that, Brother Alfred?
I really like that list. Your lists are always, they always take me back, and they always give me a history lesson on the genre that was sports movies. And I, you know what? I did like Mr. 3000. I thought it was going to be silly, and it was, but it did have a little bit of heart.
I have not seen Mr. 3000, but I have seen the other two movies. I've seen Mr. Baseball.
You saw Mr. Baseball?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Marcus Vandenberg has not seen Remember the Titans, but he has seen Mr. Baseball. When did you see the Mr. Baseball?
Oh, it's just years ago.
When you were a kid?
Yeah.
Okay, I was going to say, I can't see it.
No, I haven't seen it. No, not recently, God, no.
I was going to say, I can't see anybody, you know, over the age of 20, you know, going to seek out Mr. Baseball.
It's not even on TV. You don't even stumble across it anymore.
I don't even think Tom Selleck remembers Mr. Baseball. it was a quality movie. It wasn't great. It wasn't, you know, Major League. Like, Major League to me is still up there with Field of Dreams and The Natural in terms of best baseball movies. But, you know, Mr. Baseball, Mr. 3000, those were solid Saturday afternoon rainy movies.
Yeah.
So now, without any further ado, the man that is the king of all media, except for movies, Brother Marcus Vandenberg.
All right, so my list here, number one, Sid Finch. Okay. And you're probably saying who?
That's a quality
hit. He is a fictional character, so this fits. But he was actually part of a April Fool's joke put on by Sports Illustrated. The George Plimpton, they reached out to George Plimpton to come up with this idea for April Fool's, and they created this fictional character by the name of Sid Finch, who was supposed to be this rookie pitcher for the New York Mets, who could throw 168 miles per hour. This was 1985, people, so you know, this was the season before the Mets won the World Series in 86. So somehow the media fell for it. What helped out Sports Illustrated is they found a person to portray Sid Finch, to photograph him. And I believe it was like on April 2nd, they had actually had a press conference where, you know, this Katie portrayed Sid Finch actually retired, quote unquote. But the media actually fell for it. People were showing up to Shea Stadium to cover this kid and his phenomenon without actually seeing him throw. 2 weeks later, eventually SI confessed to the whole thing and said it was April Fool's joke. But the fact that, you know, just almost 30 years ago, that people actually fell for the fact that someone could throw 168 miles per hour, it's just stunning to me. So number one on my list, Sid Finch.
Interesting side note, though, Sid Finch is married, currently married to Manti Te'o's ex-girlfriend.
The Nature Tour?
Yeah.
I heard that.
I read that on the AP.
Number two on my list is Bugs Bunny.
Okay.
You've probably seen this cartoon, this specific episode where he takes part in a baseball game. And at the time when he comes into the game, the teetotalers, why this is the team name, I don't know. But they were trailing 95-0 to the Gas House Gorillas. And Bugs Bunny finds himself getting involved in this game. And on top of that, he has to play the game by himself. So it's 9-1. So he's playing all the positions. And there's a great scene where he throws his first pitch as a pitcher. And he runs down to catch it as a catcher. And eventually he leads his remarkable comeback and wins 96-95 all by himself. Not many guys can say that. So number two on my list is Bugs Bunny. Number three on my list, you mentioned video games earlier. John Dowd, who was a.k.a. Barry Bonds in MVP Baseball.
strong list. Strong
so,
list.
You know, typical Barry Bonds. He didn't want people making money off his likeness or anything like that. So there's a time where Barry Bonds wasn't involved in video games. So as a result, they had to create a character, and they created this white guy named John Dowd, who was actually a right-handed hitter, not a left-handed hitter, and he was white. But he had crazy power, which was supposed to, you know, 05 was in the middle of Bonds' run there. So they created this character, and he's one of the all-time great video game characters. There's videos on him on YouTube of people playing with John Dowd doing remarkable things in the game. So number three on my list is John Dowd. So John Dowd, Bugs Bunny, and Sid Finch.
That is a surprisingly strong – I was doubting you, Marcus, but you came through on this one. Sid Finch, I remember that when I was a kid. That was a great – hoax by SI. John Dowd, like, MVP Baseball was still
so great.
Even to this day, it's still probably one of the best baseball games I've ever played. And yeah, John Dowd was so funny in that one. But Bugs Bunny, that is a classic cartoon. If you haven't seen it, you could probably YouTube it or find it somewhere online. But you know, my favorite line of that movie is when the announcer's like going through the rosters and like, we've got a late minute change. First base, Bugs Bunny. Second base, Bugs Bunny. Third base, Bugs Bunny. And it's like, yeah, they're like, first of all, I don't know how the teetotalers or whoever they are.
Yeah.
I don't know how they were so bad and who was the commissioner of this league to organize this game. I don't know why the mercy rule wasn't enacted, but you know, Bugs Bunny, he should have been in the Hall of Fame just off of that one game.
Including the final out catch where he caught it on top of the Empire State Building. So there was that. He took a cab at a bus ride and got up in time to catch it. So cartoons, everyone.
That's a pretty good advertisement for New York Transit too.
It is.
Like he was able to make it to the top of the Empire State Building to make that catch. But you remember that cartoon, Alfred?
No, I don't remember that specific cartoon.
I've seen it in Lynch. You've probably seen it before. But yeah, speaking of cartoons, do kids still watch Looney Tunes and Bugs Bunny? I feel like there's a whole generation that's missing out on classic cartoons.
Yeah, they have it on like Cartoon Network. They have like a modern day version on Cartoon Network.
Yeah, my nieces watch the updated version, but they'll see it's all the old cartoons have been updated. Tom and Jerry is updated. Scooby-Doo and the gang is updated. So, like, the classic shows, unless you get up early in the morning, you're not going to see them.
Well, in my household, there will be certain cartoons and certain shows that my kids will have to watch and Looney
Tunes. Marcus is making his 2-year-old son watch the Boondocks. Nah. Why is he saying nigga, daddy?
Yeah.
That'd be much later on. When they get to the point where they're watching The Wire, they can watch the Boondocks. So.
Oh, but we did have some great feedback from our listeners. Brother Alfred, do you have the feedback ready?
I do. George Rappos kicks it off by saying, Mel Clark, a.k.a. Tony Danza, from Angels in the Outfield. Great comeback story about an old has-been pitcher that comes back and helps the Angels win the pennant. Steve Gasson.
Shout out to, was it Danny Glover that played Coach Knox in that picture?
Yeah. And then Steve Gasson, friend of the show. Pedro Serrano, Major League.
Yes.
This man's become the president in all caps. President in all caps. And then Jamie Robinson, another friend of the show. I'm going to count it down on this one. Number 3, Ham Porter of the Sandlot. Very good. Then he says, number 2, Marlo Hooch from A League of Their Own. Ugly as sin, but she can smash a ball. And the undisputed number 1. And I kind of agree with this. I should have said this. Kenny Mother Effin' Powers, because he's Kenny Mother Effin' Powers. Season 4 of Eastbound and Down on right now. And it's really good.
I love the first season of Eastbound and Down, but that was when I had HBO. So it's been a little bit tougher to can't keep up with the seasons since then. But, yeah, Kenny Powers is a great character.
Yeah. First season was hilarious. Second season was I thought it was bad because he went to Mexico and it was just kind of a one-joke season to where he's constantly making Mexican jokes. And, yeah, I didn't think it was very funny after a while. But third season comes back to the state and it was funny. And then they brought it back for a fourth. And this season's off to a great start.
Has Ashley Schaefer returned?
No.
Will Ferrell look like Ric Flair?
Not yet.
Ashley Schaefer, BMW.
Not yet, but there was a huge angle with him. He was really involved in last season, and it was hilarious. They had, like, he was like the supervillain of last season.
Yeah, I was definitely, that was the highlight of season one, where Ashley Schaefer was like, yeah, this Rick outsized Ric Flair type personality. Then you had Craig Robinson playing Kenny Powers' nemesis.
Knocked out his eyeball.
Yeah, who was supposedly this born again Christian, but he was like still doing crack. Was Otis Nixon the consultant on the show?
I wouldn't be surprised if he was.
How we bring it all back together. But that's going to be it for this week. Again, great list, great feedback, everybody. You can leave feedback each and every week at facebook.com/kingsofsport or on Twitter, KOS_POD, Cosprod on Twitter. Or hit us up on Gmail like Paul did and leave us feedback or just send hate mail to Alfred at thekingsofsport@gmail.com.
Just remember to make your words soft and sweet because you're going to have to eat them.
Real confident still.
I like how Marcus and I just no-sell your braggadociousness now.
It's not no-sell. You guys know you're just
you're like Tyson after he lost to Buster Douglas. Oh, the mystique is gone, brother.
Okay, we'll see about that. You guys keep all of this on wax, okay? Because I want all this brought back when I win in my championship ceremony. Which, by the way, okay, before we get out of here, my championship ceremony after I win, we're gonna get a whole show dedicated to that, whether you guys like it or not. All right, I'll have my lawyers drop a contract. You'll be ironclad and bound to have a show dedicated to my championship celebration. We will count down the top. Our lists are going to be the top 3 moments of Alfred Kudowa's fantasy championship season. Can't wait.
A whole show?
An entire show.
Do you still want listeners? Because we would lose them.
This would be the highest rated show of the year.
Yeah. So good luck, Paul. I don't know who plays you this week. Who are you playing this week?
I'm playing the Super Giants.
Oh, come on, Dennis Black and Asian.
You're done, Dennis.
I don't know who I'm playing this week. Let me see.
Get a win for Team Light Skin.
The Flip Nuts.
Uh-oh.
With a Z.
That is a former, I believe he's a former 2-time league champion, but he's fallen on hard times as of late. He did make a trade this past week, so we'll see.
And in the battle of 1-4 teams, Nate and the Tetsons.
Oh, yeah. Big Ross. Big Ross, I'm going to treat you like the government and shut you down, brother. That's not a joking matter. I'm sorry, America.
Yeah, I can no-sell your little jokes, too.
I'm sorry, America. And on that note... The mood just got all depressing after a while.
They still shut down. They did their final paycheck tomorrow. That's it.
Too soon. Too soon.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like, did you see, like, the Taliban sent a diss video making fun of us because the government's been shut down?
Nah, I didn't see that.
You got the Taliban sending out diss tracks. It's like,
was it a freestyle?
I think Kanye was in it. If you don't give my girl a star on the Walk of Fame, I'm going to shut down everything, fam. She does have a Hall of Fame backside, though. I'll give her that. on that note, let's let the people know where they can find us. Money Vandenberg, where can the people follow you and keep up with your work? Maybe send you some congratulations.
This whole nickname thing is going to make me look such an asshole in that tweet when I talked about buying a car with this whole money nickname thing. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Marco Will, MarcoWill.
Big Ducky.
Well, first of all, shout out to Marcus Vandenberg. Congratulations again for your APSC Diversity Fellows. Very, very pristine honor. And you can follow me on Twitter at This Is Nasty. Go to Bleach Report. Read the Spread Shredder. Read my WWE stuff. Watch my WWE videos and my NFL stuff. So if you hate me, remember, I'm coming back, and reports of the demise of Alfred Big Nasty Kunawa are greatly exaggerated.
I feel like he just congratulated you just to buddy you up so he can get his show, his Big Nasty football show if he ends up winning the league.
What a boo-boo head you are.
I want to
I worked it in. Due to that. Damn it, I got it. I flubbed it.
Built it the whole show, and you called
me. I missed a spot there.
Oh.
Popmania.
Next week.
Oh, see, so that's what happened, man. You joined the 1%, and you lost your comedic timing.
I know, but watch, check out Alfred's videos. They are pretty hilarious. That's what we're making reference to something that happened in this week's video. So
yeah, Alfred does like, and the funny thing is, like, the people, they hate your articles, but they're coming around.
They're turning
video.
On the videos. They want to hate, but they're too good. So
I don't know. Maybe now that they get to know my personality, they can fall in love with me.
Yeah, or something. And you can follow me at in the number 8 MOZAK, Nate Mosaic on Twitter. Follow all of us, Cospod, KOS_POD. Again, big shout out to Alfredo Torres for stopping by, chatting with us, well, most of us. You can check his show out at facebook.com/Torres vs. Zombies. And we're going to come back next week and do it again. So, yeah, hope you enjoyed the show. Show number 31 is in the books. And I think I'm going to call it a night, man. It's hard work being a genius.
I'm going to keep notes on until I get away, man.
Now you're just being spiteful.
Damn right I am.
So, for Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, quack, quack. For Marcus Money Man Vandenberg, I am the Godfather Nate Milton, and you've been down with the Kings.
Well, that's all for this week's edition of the Kings of Sport. Be sure to come back next week for an all-new episode. You can leave feedback for the show on Twitter at KOS_POD or via Gmail at thekingsofsport@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and rate us on iTunes and tell a friend. The Kings of Sport is a production of the Mosaic Podcast Network.
Whether you like it or not, he's back. D-A-double-D-Y, that's ass. Sharp as a tack, like I just left.